indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Here.
Catherine Gerber Funes. Frank Hay.
Here.
Leonard King.
Here.
Stan Brodsky.
Here.
Richard Levine.
Here.
George Palmer.
Here.
Steve Tremblay.
Here.
Nathan Bull.
Here.
Okay, we have a quorum, so we will continue. Under C, approval of the agenda. Resolved that Superintendent Schools recommends the Board of Education approve the agenda.
Motion.
Thank you, Leonard.
Richard.
I'll second that.
What did I do?
Briefly for public comment. Is there anyone that would like to make a comment to the board tonight? Okay. I'm not going to move into presentations because we're going to do that at 7 o'clock. I'm also going to move over reports because that takes in part of the presentation. So if the board is okay with that, we'll start at your time. Oh, yeah, we could probably do it. Are you ready for Ron?
Yes, sir.
Well, let's do that. That's a good idea.
Okay. Just a couple notes tonight. Third quarter ends this Friday, so teachers are finalizing everything for third quarter, and we'll be moving into the final stretch of the school year after spring break. Also, the internal auditor came to the school today, and he was able to talk with members of the student council and the class of 2009 about everything that they do as a group and how they ran meetings, how they made decisions, and also how they kept their records. Student Council is has a lot of money in their through the Eagle Mart, so they just wanted to see how records were kept and make sure everything was up to date with that. Also, the Student Council elections for the 2009-2010 school year have been held this week, and all students in the grades 9 through 11 were able to enter the election, and they had to make a campaign video through the student council, and that was videotaped by Mr. LaPierre, and they could just talk about anything they wanted to say to the student body, and that was shown this week, and results will be in after spring break. That's just about it.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Any questions, comments? Under 5 minutes, resolved that the Board of Education does hereby approve the minutes of the meeting with the Board of Education, which is held on 3/24.
Motion.
Second.
Richard, thank you, Guy. Corrections, deletions, all in favor?
Aye.
Abstains? No's? Motion carries. Under B, resolved that the Board of Education does hereby accept the minutes of the audit committee, which was held on 3/24.
Motion.
Or Richard?
Second.
I'm going to move you guys.
I mean, I don't see the likeness. I really don't like it.
Maybe that one's a skill.
Oop, I must that.
This beard from me. Guys, send me. Thank you. Any changes, deletions? All in favor?
Aye.
Abstains? No's? Motion carries. Under 6, new business, CSE recommendations. Resolved that the Superintendent of Schools recommends to the Board of Education the approval of the CSE recommendations dated 4/7/09.
Motion.
Thank you, Richard.
Okay.
Steve. You got it right there. All in favor?
Aye.
Abstains? No's? Motion carries. Under personnel, resignation. Resolved that the Superintendent of Schools recommends to the Board of Education to accept the following resignation. Listed below.
Motion.
Thank you, Richard. Thank you, Steve. All in favor?
Aye.
Abstains? No? Motion carries. Under appointments, resolved that the superintendent of schools recommends to the Board of Education for following permanent civil service appointment as indicated.
Motion.
Second.
Thank you, Guy. Thank you, Leonard. 50-50. All in favor?
Aye.
Abstains? No's? Motion carries. Congratulations to that young lady. Under B, resolved that the superintendent of schools recommends to the Board of Education the following substitute appointments beginning on the date indicated.
Move the list.
These are all instructional. Thank you, Richard.
Second.
Guy. All in favor?
Aye.
Abstains? No's? Motion carries. Resolved that the superintendent of schools recommends to the Board of Education to appoint the following civil service probationary appointment as indicated.
Move the list.
Second.
Thank you, Richard. Thank you, Karen. All in favor?
Aye.
Abstains? No's? That motion carries. Under unpaid leave, resolved that superintendent of schools recommends to the Board of Education accept the unpaid leave of absence from Bonnie Chris as a bus driver from 1/12/09 to 5/26/09.
Motion.
Second.
Thank you, Richard. Thank you, Karen. All in favor?
Aye.
Abstains?
It's dated 1/12. I mean, why is this going to us now? Isn't it kind of late?
Physics.
Yeah, listen.
I was explaining.
Yeah. Packet update. Would you like to abstain?
No.
So I'll again just reiterate that. All in favor?
Aye.
Abstains? No's? Motion carries. Under tenure, resolved that the superintendent of schools recommends to the Board of Education approve the following tenure appointments effective on this date indicated.
I'll move the list.
Second.
Thank you, Richard. Thank you, Steve.
George.
And George?
George Davis.
Oh. George then? So Richard and George. All in favor?
Aye.
Abstains? No's? Motion carries.
I'd like to make a comment, though.
Okay.
I think we're very fortunate to have all three of these people tenured in our district. We're all very good administrators, and I think as a district, we're quite lucky to have all three tenured.
Thank you.
Congratulations, guys.
Under C, miscellaneous, resolved that superintendent of schools recommends to the Board of Education to adopt the 2009-2010 school calendar.
Motion.
Second.
Thank you, Richard. Thank you, Leonard. Any questions?
Is this a BOCES calendar? This so-called BOCES calendar that we're using?
The BOCES district comes up with a calendar and supplies it to each district. Then the district looks at it and can change any way the district would like to fit its means. It's not an ironclad piece, but
right.
It originates at the BOCES district.
Okay, so are the superintendent days matching the BOCES superintendent days? Or?
They seldom do.
And they haven't in the past,
and
they still don't.
We have one. I'm trying to remember which one it is now, but there is one day where a half day superintendent's day matches up. They haven't historically, and they don't always, because OC's writes the schedule for their CBS component as well as all the area districts.
Right.
Not everyone can read the time of the year. Usually they're off a couple of days on one side or the other. Would be important to be reminded that we have representatives from our district who serve on the calendar committee with the BOCES when they actually generate the calendar. So we try to get every employee in.
I guess I didn't realize that, but that's good. But so the question is, how much of it is a hardship in terms of bus routes and student schedule and the shared services we have when we deviate? Does that, you know, are we paying for services on days that we don't have students here and all that kind of stuff?
No. It's almost a wash because on days that BOCES is closed and they don't provide the service, of course, our students are going to BOCES. Mm-hmm. Therefore, in our staff development days where they're in session, we would send our students there, even though we're doing staff development in our district. So it's not, it hasn't been a cost disruption. As far as transportation goes, I would only have to, I guess I would ask Shane. He's shaking his head no, that transportation back and forth on those days is not an issue, correct, Shane?
That's correct.
Okay.
Any other questions on the calendar? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Abstains? Noes? Motion carries.
Can I ask a related question now? Have we made a decision on the unused snow days? Have that formally been announced?
Yeah, we have the 2 days.
That was on the calendar that was adopted last year by the board. It was on there. Mm-hmm. They'll be used at May, the Thursday, prior to the Friday before Memorial, and the Tuesday, whatever those dates are. If the district doesn't use any more before then.
We calendared in the 4 days. Mm-hmm. In reverse order, and
you might need it tonight.
Well, I'll say that.
But it does get formally announced again to the parents as a point because of people who up the schedule or go out in newsletters as early as possible.
We do it on our normal publications also. I'm asking if I can't say because I haven't looked at it. The newsletter that the schools put out would also have those makeup or those snow days announced. But they are available, would be again announced on our school calendar as part of our website.
Okay, we will move to policies. Result of the Board of Education is hereby approved, and actually we're not fully approving them at this point, but we're going into the second reading. Has anybody taken a look at the policies for the second reading?
Do you want to reword it?
No, we are approving.
Well, we're approving them for the second reading.
Okay.
But I just wanted to make sure board members understood that this is not the final. We have another reading.
For the second reading.
I'll move the
list. Yes, it's approval for the second.
It is the second and final reading.
There'll be one more time.
Okay.
One more time.
Thank you.
I'll say Richard. See. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Abstains? No. Motion carries. Under financial, the result that the Board of Education does hereby accept the following reports as presented by the audit committee. Questions? Comments? All in favor?
Aye.
Abstains? Noes? Under B, resolved that the superintendent of schools recommends the Board of Education to accept the following donations and approve amending the district budget to increase in the amount of $2,000.
I'll move it.
Second.
Frank and Guy.
I think it was good.
Frank and Guy.
Guy, did you second?
Yes.
Okay, that's what I thought. Thank you. Questions, comments? Roll call, please.
Richard Levine.
Yes.
George Palmer.
Yes.
Guy Falcon.
Yes.
Frank Hay.
Yes.
Larry King.
Yes.
Karen Armstrong.
Yes.
Steve Trombley.
Yes.
Stan Kroski.
Yes. Under additional items. vote on the CVES tenure administrative budget and school board candidates. We're scheduling that for the 7:30 on the 23rd. Because how do we look for scheduled people? I know I can make it.
I can make it.
You can? George can try.
Oh, no, 7:30 a.m. No.
A.m. Okay.
What day is that?
Monday.
That's a Monday.
Oh, I can't make it. Thursday.
It's not a Monday. That's right, it's a Thursday.
No, it's not Monday.
It's always a Thursday.
So I gotta have one of you.
All right, we're gonna have to try to reschedule then to get to try to get five there.
We have a schedule.
I can do anything in the early afternoon.
Sorry.
I'm not gonna make it. Try to move it earlier? Later? We go with Steve.
I'm gonna have you guys here at 5:30 again.
I can do probably seven.
5:30 in the morning? Works for me.
I can do it at 5:30. Hey, I'll do it at 5:30.
Last year?
Yeah.
That's what we did last year.
Well, if it works, it works.
I can make 5:30.
I can do 5:30. I have a choice.
If I'm here, I'll be there.
Yeah, I understand that you're on a watch. George, is that a little too early?
No, I can do it before 5:30. I can do it after 5:30 at night. Before 7:30 in the morning.
Is okay.
7:30 or earlier or after 5:30 at night.
Would you guys rather try doing the evening rather than after 7:30?
You got them three.
Yeah, but if the five agree to an evening, then we won't have to.
I'd go either way. I don't care.
Yeah. Yeah, that's what Steve said. Didn't care either way. So
yeah.
We do it 7:30 in the evening or 7:00 in the evening.
Would you change it to PM, sorry? Yeah.
Would you like to try to shoot for a 7 that evening?
That'd be fine.
We'll still use the superintendent's office.
All right.
Yeah.
7.
I think the lights are. Yeah.
Well, just don't ever leave.
We have a form.
We do have a form. That will be able to do.
And he'll send an email to remind us that day.
Okay. Our next meeting, which will be the last one before this vote, I have asked Richard to kind of give us an update on the budget at BOCES that we're going to be voting on.
No.
Just bring it.
Next one.
The next meeting.
Boy, I'm glad I didn't miss that. I got nothing tonight. Yeah, I'll have the meeting tomorrow night, so there's nothing I can give you now anyway.
Okay. Advisory solutions, the demographic enrollment projects, facilities, capacity, studies, analysis report.
I'd like to do
one. Would you like to?
Just as a reminder, this initiative, if you will, of inquiry began a couple of months ago when we were talking about the West Side Eagle and what to do options, if you remember. And originally, the idea was to have an analysis of the building to determine its feasibility long term and short term. And at the same time, an idea began to coagulate a little bit, and I asked the School Board Association if, in fact, they could conduct a study on a little bit of a broader basis, looking specifically at our building utilization needs for the next 10, 15 years, trying to get a better sense of what our enrollment projections will be, because we haven't had a census done in about 10 years. Also, the design of the two buildings in terms of how they're set up, being both of them being K-5 structures. So the group, Advisory Solutions, as it indicates on their cover page, took that task to heart and sketched out a proposal on how they might proceed with such a study. There really is no timeline to begin the study. It's not, it isn't contingent, if the decision is to, or if there's more conversation needed, we certainly can do that. You can do that. There's no timeline necessary to get it done by, you know, a certain date. It's just that if there is to be value in thinking about next year through the summer as a result of a study having been done, then it would make sense to do it this year as opposed to do it later. Having said that, I just wanted to bring it back and again, make the board aware of the contents of the study, the proposal, with the options, the things that they would look at, and the services they could provide if we wanted to have them as a group proceed with the study. There's a lot of data in these pages that would be gathered. Certainly we'll read them all to you, but we hope as outcomes, if the study is approved, we would hope as outcomes we would have a pretty good census report, which would tell us about our student population trends in the past as well as in the next 5 to 10 years. Their group has been doing this for quite some time. They are former superintendents who have been finance or business managers or buildings folks in their careers and have consolidated through New York School Boards Association to form a company, and this is what they now do. They provide these services for a number of school districts and universities actually throughout New York State, and have come, you know, pretty well recommended by the industry as these folks are doing a decent job for, a very good job for you. So we would get census data. We would also get suggestions, if there are any to offer, what the future district would want to do with respect to building utilization, particularly the two elementary schools. If size becomes an issue based on census, a typical question would be, is it wiser or more prudent to consider building or going out on a referendum to add space, or would there be enough space within the two buildings if they were restructured differently than they currently are, being two K-5 buildings? So knowing that those are always important questions, not to sneak up on the public, so to speak, on a year or two's notice, that's the purpose of the studies, to give us a longitudinal look at that. As I pointed out last time, and I'll remind you again, the actual proposal is broken out fee structure-wise on page 6 in your packet. And I'm simply, at this point, seeking either some more conversation and or a sense of direction, maybe a timeline and or direction, so that I may get back to the folks at Advisory Solutions who will be waiting for my call to indicate when, you know, where we are with the proposal.
Would you answer the question again? Is this aidable? Is this poster aidable?
A portion of it is. Yeah, a portion of it is. They do a GPS mapping of the whole school district, and I have to find which section where you made the comment where the BOCES aid applies, but there is BOCES aid applying to
like
a portion of it.
30% of it, but not 80%.
It's not the whole thing, no.
Small.
It would be a smaller portion than a larger portion, correct. That's my understanding, at least that's from.
This would kind of fulfill our census piece that we've been looking for, kind of to get a future sense of what it's looking like as far as
it would do that.
Children.
It would minimally do that. There has been there's a fairly hefty cost, I'm told. I've never done door-to-door census myself, but I'm told that the cost to do door-to-door census in a traditional format has risen over the years because of the fees needed. And then there's the question of the accuracy, because you pay for individuals to make contacts at the site, but if nobody's home, then you're either going to assume they're coming back over and over again to get the data, or the data you get is the data that's been collected. So. And it's not to disparage previous census efforts, it's just the way the industry talks about doing census now. They actually don't even call it, they call it enrollment projections as opposed to census. And they do studies on live births over the last 10 years, and they stay in contact with the hospitals relative to live births with each passing year. Demographics on populations moving in and out, they actually will work with local realtors to get the concepts down in terms of income, median income, the kinds of houses and rental properties that are moving or being built, what the contractors, what they're anticipating doing in the future with respect to housing. They pull in just a ton of sources that they research, and then they where Maple Country boil it down to the condensable version of saying, here's some ideas, here's some options for you. They don't make recommendations saying you should do. That's not part of their purpose. They're basically like, so I'm taking an x-ray and saying, here's what we see, and now let the governing board decide what it wants to do with that picture.
Right, it's going to give us, I mean, it'll give us a better picture of what we're going to have to do with the West Shays E building, too, if we can...
Yeah, that'll factor in.
If we...
Yes.
Something that Operations Committee has been looking at pretty extensively, so after this is done, we'll have a much better idea what to do with that building, for what its assessed valuation's at right now. We know that. It's not going to give us any particular cost of revamping that building, but I think we've already, we know some ballpark figures on that. This will give us a very good idea down the road, 5-10 years, if we're actually going to need that building again. Not that I'm looking to spend money, but I think this is probably money well spent just to get the data that we're going to need. At least we're not going to be operating blind.
My concern is, when I read this packet, was the economic times. I'm sure they'll take it into account, but I'm sure that homes aren't going to sell at this moment the way they've sold in the past, and construction probably isn't going to go on the way it has in the past. So that was an item that, you know, of concern for me when I read this, to do this right at this time.
Well, we should make a decision on yesterday.
A couple other questions I had. And Steve's right about that West Shays E building. You know, we've been dragging our feet, wondering, you know, not having enough information to make a decision. So we need information. But that one of the things that we have talked about in years past, when we talked about selling the building or utilizing it, one of the things was we had just in phase one of the last bond issue put a lot of money into it, and if we sold it, would we owe money back to the state head department? To answer that question definitively, what we would have to, what would be the implications of unloading it? Could we make sure that we get a firm answer on that?
From a state point of view?
Yeah.
Okay.
You know,
I don't know that.
Richard and I was just talking about before the meeting, and I forgot, but we had discussed it previously before your 15 year.
Did we ever get a question answered whether or not we get that, if we sell the building, if the money from that building is deducted from our state aid? It's another piece that came up. That
there wouldn't be any state aid for that building because there's no students in it.
No, it's in other words, you're using it to generate income. And in the past, they used to take that income off your state aid. I don't know if that's still...
Are we generating income on that right now?
No,
from
if you
the
sold
sale.
It. If you sold
all
it.
From the sale.
Just to sell it out.
It used to be if you sold for $500,000, they'd take $100,000 from you for 5 years in a row. We just don't know if that's still true. And that's what we want to know.
That would be a good question. $2 million. Boiler being replaced.
Yeah.
And that's essentially what it was.
I can certainly research that. We don't, again, don't necessarily need tonight. It's
no, it's just a long.
Item, but it's I
thought it's something that should go into this proposal.
Okay.
It's something we should definitely know about. Yes, Richard.
I understand the economic times, but I don't see how we can make any kind of decision unless we know what this information is going to be. I mean, I know I was on the operations committee, and how you make a decision not knowing any of this is beyond me. Because you might turn around and say, we want to get rid of it, and then 2 years down the road, you got a lot more kids, and if we don't do this, we won't know. So I'm kind of torn either way, but, you know, I think we don't have to do what they say, but let's get some kind of idea so we know where we're going to be. You know, because if, say they say we got a projection and say we're going to have more kids, well, that's going to make a difference in what you want to do with the school.
Yes, Frank.
I was going to say, if we start moving students into that building, we're going to be obligated to go to building principal. We're not going to get away with it this time.
Right, no, that's definite.
I mean, if for 60 or 100 kids, you're going to have to have an administrator up there. So, I mean, that's the thought that we should be looking at, too. Maybe we, in the end, would be better off adding classrooms to the two main campuses.
And the principal wouldn't be the only person either. There'd be other two you'd have to have in there.
Yeah, but I'm just saying, a principal's a major expense.
And that in part is what we hope that can give us a handle on those kinds of think abouts when they get in fact started with.
Also, in your packet this time, the GDG real estate is willing to work on selling at a percentage. So, I mean, there's an organization that'll help.
Did anybody see the article in the paper today from Real Property?
About raising taxes?
Well, about property values not dropping in Clinton County, going up.
I saw that.
Just kind of a, be prepared.
Well, now they're, I guess that's not a good time to get into it. I'm fighting that off, but we've got all that.
It's not our fault.
No, it's not.
Well, I'd like to get an idea, you know, is this something we want to move forward, looking into some of the pieces, or is this?
I don't think we have a choice.
$20,000.
It wasn't identified in this budget. We didn't know at the time when the budget was set last.
Can we find $20,000 in our budget? That's the question.
That we think we can do it. That's, but that's why I'm bringing it forward. It's under Paul.
Which means that would keep it out of next year's budget if you decide to move it next year. We done that? Yes, Scott.
I have a comment about it too. We've had some discussions about bringing some students from BOCES over to here.
Yes.
And this would help us make sound decisions on moving kids back and forth, or, you know,
are we going to have space,
or is it feasible? We're better off bringing them back over here. Because things change from year to year.
So, just the general idea, is there anybody against not moving this forward to get some questions answered from tonight and take a hard look at this? We shouldn't let this go much past the next meeting.
I like the fact it's just information, not a recommendation. And that's what we need, is information.
Just add this to the agenda for next time again.
Yes, we have questions answered.
And there's no closer organization that would do a good of a job. We don't need to get a competitive bid on this. I don't know who else does it, but I'm just asking to make sure that this is a
thing.
Don't believe so. Again, the route I went through started with School Boards Association looking for anybody that does this kind of study, and that's when they steered me to this particular. They said this is the group they use when they give the advice like this to districts seeking to do this kind of study. So that's the conversation really then with one firm based on School Boards Association's endorsement. If there are others out there, I do not.
So we add this to the next agenda, bring it back one more time. But we should be at a place that we need to make a decision definitely by the next.
I'll look for questions certainly between now and then. If you have any, email me, call me.
Yes,
I'll do my best to get answers for you in an update. But so far, the questions really have to do with implications of the sales as SED sees it, specifically in terms of any lost state aid that might be involved in doing something with the building. How does that affect state aid?
Well, even in past bond issue, do we have to pay back any money that's spent on it?
Right. You'd have to pay back any outstanding debt on the building with proceeds from the sale.
And is there any outstanding?
Right. Any debt that's...
Is there any outstanding?
Well, I don't know. I can certainly find it out.
Could we have, could we find out what the debt load is on that too?
Is that part of the capital project?
The debt load.
The percentage?
Under West Shaysy Building, what's left?
We haven't paid off the capital project.
That's a separate entity, there's three parts to the capital project.
So it's gonna, we don't know how much of it is yet.
Is the bond is separate or the same? It's all bond.
It's all the capital.
Is there parts of this that we might not have to do?
Since it's data, can we get that to the national census?
Well, I'm looking at that, I'm looking at the capacity study of the elementary buildings, I know it's $2,500, but would our superintendent and our building administrators have a better grasp on how they could move those things around to create room than somebody just walking in looking at the rooms? I mean, we're kinda like, we've got those people here already.
But are they gonna do another contract?
Well, I don't think this is all inclusive, is it?
Is it all inclusive?
No, no, I wouldn't characterize that at all, they've been very good about just kinda listening to what the needs are, what we're looking at, and we kinda crafted together what they would.
And maybe, and I don't even know if that's feasible, maybe I'm giving the building administrators more than they wanna do, I don't know, I just a thought. It seems to me that who knows the buildings better than them.
My only concern with that would be that we'd have to have all of them, because part of the study is how do you, you might use the buildings differently.
Right.
And you'd have to have them all together to do that, because say, what if you're gonna move these two grades over this school or something, you can't, just one couldn't do it. You'd have to have all of them for the input.
Well, in their free time, they say.
You just answered your own question.
Yeah.
I certainly could propose to them that there be, if the dollars are, would be the concern, that this would be no larger than, and then work toward there being less fees wherever we can find them.
Right.
Certainly, I mean, that, it's, again, they've been, it's been a good group to talk with about it, they haven't pressured or felt a need to not listen to the, it started off, as I said, as West Shaysy Building Study, and it's morphed into, well, maybe you wanna look at our suggestions, look at all of them at the same time.
It's a good idea, bring it outside.
Right, and if they've done it in other school districts, they may have other insights that, you know, from working on mergers and stuff that we wouldn't think of, so.
I got what I need.
How we're getting this information.
So we'll bring this back for action.
Yes.
And it doesn't come as a full package, if you do have some pieces that you wanna change or look at, we'll make that discussion at our next meeting. We'll try to make a decision on how we're gonna move with that. And at this time, I'd like to, I'd like to. Yeah, it's gonna take some time to work.
Right, before this.
So I'd like to move over so we can be timely for our, and I'd like to invite everyone to move to the auditorium for our presentation.
I'm good to go?
Yes.
Ready?
Yes.
All set?
Yes.
Okay. Is there anything that you want to say before we start?
Nope.
Okay. I just have to say, guess who the board members are with their backs to everybody?
Yeah, I know.
That's understandable.
Do you want to turn off your mouth? We can.
Yeah, whatever.
That'll work.
We're going to get started with the budget presentation of 2009-2010. The board members are up here, and it's a little awkward because of the seating arrangement, but I wanted to know if you're having difficulty seeing all of our board that's present this evening is here and are here also to entertain any questions that you might have as we proceed through the presentation and also at the end of the presentation. I'll also say in advance of the comments that we'll make this evening that if you are a member of a group or an organization for which you feel it would be helpful for any of our district staff to come and visit, be it a club or a civic group or some organization like that, a table and a couple of chairs is all I need. I'll be very happy to come to you and further explain the budget to any of your constituents that can't possibly be here tonight for whatever reason. The budget also, the presentation will also be on our website, and the website is just about ready to be revealed. In fact, it's been revamped considerably, and after Thursday of this week, we'll be able to load the budget presentation on the website, and you'll also have access to it there. So multiple opportunities to become familiar with what's in this budget as it's proposed, And also spread the good word to your neighbors and friends that if not being here was an issue and they would like a little bit more of a personal description of it, we'll do our best to honor that by coming to where those groups gather. Okay? A couple of comments before I turn the program over to our business manager, Ryan Pointer. In this budget year, the preparing for next year's school budget has been a roller coaster experience at best. If you have read in the paper, like many of us have, there was a significant discussion in Albany relative to what state aid would or would not be like for school districts. For business managers and superintendents and boards of education, it posed a significant nightmare. On any given day, we were hearing rumors that ran all the way from expect no aid on any account, foundation aid is going to be frozen, and all the way up to including a deficit reduction aid, deficit reduction cost, one-time cost, if you will, in order to help Albany balance the budget for the school year. That information, as you've been following the paper, took weeks and weeks and weeks, and just literally about a week ago was resolved with the passage of the budget. Lots of pros and cons on how the process went, etc. But for us as a school district, it became exceedingly important that we built, first of all, our planning on the budget was assuming a worst-case scenario. We knew back in January, February, that there was a possibility of our school district being affected to the negative of over $800,000 in lost state aid. As a result of that, we began with our administrators and our supervisors to craft a proposed budget with that assumption that that money would be gone. The federal stimulus, and we did that, and we had a pretty prudent, we think a very good budget for you to look at, but they were very prudent about how they forecast their costs, also trying to save dollars this year, because a part of the presentation you will see is our effort to do some pre-purchasing of items for next year because they just tightened the strings so well this year that we don't want to have leftover money going back into a fund balance. We want to apply it to next year to lower the overall cost of the budget, and we've done that. Then came the late news that the federal stimulus money was going to be available to all the states. New York, of course, benefited from that as well. Our school district in particular benefited its portion of it. So out of the formula came the deficit reduction money that was forecast. The $800,000 that was going to be not given to district was put back in as a form of a combination of foundation aid as well as the deficit reduction aid. And these terms will make a little bit more sense, I hope, as we move through it. Most school districts did not receive, you probably read in the paper, foundation aid, the general categorical aid applied to give for school districts, was determined to be flat or 0% increase. You'll see in a few moments a slide that speaks to actually our district got an increase in that amount. And that's largely because of the good work done by several of our own administrators, and specifically in the special education department, being able to go back and track previous years and recoup state aid that we would have otherwise lost. And by doing some real good investigative work, we got an actual bump, if you will, in the cost centers that we were expecting $0 in. So that's just one of the features that we tried to apply as we move forward in developing this budget. At this time, I'm going to turn it over to get the slideshow started to Ryan Klemser, our business manager. He'll be on his feet to cover a couple of slides with you, and then I'll be jumping back in and taking you through the rest of the program. Ron?
Thank you, Scott. Good evening. Can everyone hear me okay? Especially those in the back? I'll take that as a yes. All right.
There we go.
Got it. Oh. This is why I do money and not computers.
There we go.
So when we start looking at building the budget, we look at the budget from two different aspects, much like all of us do when we deal with our budgets at home. We have revenues or money coming into the school district, and then we have money going out of the school district, and that's our expenditures. And we actually operate off of a zero-based budget, which means our revenues equal our expenditures. And when we go about beginning to build the budget, we actually build that on some assumptions, because some of the things are things that we just don't know at the current time. So our first slide is a slide that will explain to you some of the budget assumptions we have when we look at our revenues. And these would be the monies that we have coming in from various sources.
as you'll see in one of the other slides, we have pretty much two different types of revenue sources, and the superintendent will cover that. We have the tax revenue sources, which comes from the tax levy, and then we have all non-tax revenue, which our state aid is inclusive in the non-tax revenue. So the first line that we have here, as you'll see on the slide, is that we were assuming a 0% in all assessed value. Even as late as today, I've spoken to the real property office, and they're non-committal in telling me what the assessments will be. Some of you may have read in the paper today, on the front page of the paper, that James Gagneau from the real property office had indicated that there are some towns that may experience an increase in assessments. Those towns that would be affected in this school district would include portions of the town of Altona and the towns of Beacontown. We did not include those assessed increases in this budget, and so what we did is we took last year's assessed value and applied that to this year's budget. The next thing, as the superintendent had indicated, is state aid. State aid is a big portion of our revenue. It comes from the state education department, and it's based on various formulas and factors that are very complicated. They usually tell us what our expected state aid is going to be, and we wait for the approval of the state budget. It's usually the state aid is defined by the governor's proposal and the legislative proposal. We just recently heard that the state approved their budget, and so we got our finalized state aid numbers. And we are experiencing a 4.18% increase over what we budgeted last year for state aid. It's worth noting that if you were to look at the state education department and look at state aid for Beacontown schools and compare those numbers, you won't see a 4.18 because the 4.18 reflects an increase over what we budgeted last year, not necessarily what we received. And when we budgeted last year, it was based off of an assumption of what the state budget was going to be, and they didn't have that approved at the time. So the 4.18 represents a budget-to-budget increase in state aid revenue, which is actually really good. Last year, we had less than 2% of state aid increase. Unfortunately, we have experienced, like all of us, the school district has experienced a reduction in our interest revenue. We have money in money market funds, we have money in our checking accounts, and we have money that we receive interest revenue from. Last year, when interest rates were high, we received quite a bit of interest revenue. And as the interest rates have gone down to literally nothing, we're experiencing little revenue from that now. So we've taken those rates into effect as we project into the future what our interest revenue will be, and we're expecting to have a loss of about $125,000 over this current year. And then in previous months, we had spoken about a pilot program that was in the town of Plattsburgh, and a pilot program is when a company comes into the area, they set up a payment in lieu of taxes, and so they have a contracted amount that they pay instead of having an assessed value and a tax rate applied to assessed value. One of the larger companies in the area, that pilot program was due to expire this current fiscal year. And when we did the budget last year, we had projected to lose that pilot revenue because at the time, they were saying if the pilot expired that they were going to leave town. Since then, through different processes, that they have decided to stay. The town and the school district and the other entities have created a new pilot program. And so that has shown up as an increase of $240,000 for next year. So that's one of the assumptions that we're going off of for our increased revenue. And then each year, the board decides how much of the fund balance they would like to apply towards the budget to help alleviate some of the additional burden on the taxpayers. If the board did not decide to apply fund balance, then the $1.75 million that's being applied would have to be collected through the tax levy. So this year, the board has increased that from 1.5, where the recommendation is on the table right now, to increase that from 1.5 million, another $250,000 to the 1.75 million. And then lastly, there's a capital debt reserve, and this is money that we had set up for the capital project, that the $30 million capital project that had happened over a series of years. That project has been completed, and because of completing the project and saving money here and there, and in addition to that, because of the interest rates, we were able to experience interest revenue off of the money that was in accounts while the project was going on. According to state law, we can only utilize that interest revenue to pay down debt for that capital project. We can't apply it to anything else. And we had $1 million in excess revenue that we had earned interest, mostly from interest, over the course of years. And starting 2 years ago, we decided to start applying $200,000 of that money towards the budget each year to make a debt payment of $200,000. And that $200,000 payment is also a part of this budget. So basically, the $200,000 goes to reduce the principal payment of the capital project that's in the budget. The other side of our budget is are you operating now for me, Gary? Okay. The expenditures. So some of the things that we go into planning for the budget is on the expenditure side, and there are things that we have to assume as well. When we start building the budget, we don't know what the health insurance rates are going to be. We don't know what other rates are going to be, like the rate for teachers' retirement or employer retirement pension programs, and that rate is established by New York State. And so we begin to build the budget off of assumptions. Those assumptions are included on this slide, and what we know is that now we are seeing 7% increase in health insurance premiums. We had that number about a month ago. We've applied that number to this budget document, and we're going off of that. In addition to that, we're seeing a 7% increase in the contribution, we're seeing a 7% contribution rate for teachers' retirement program. That's actually a decrease in that contribution rate over the last year, which was 7.63, and that's reflected on this page. And then the employer retirement system, which is all non-teacher staff, there's no increase in that contribution rate. It's remaining this year at 11.51%. And then the other thing is we have BOCES, and NERC is actually a BOCES that deals with computers. It stands for Northeast Regional Information Center, and it's a BOCES component. And we are assuming a 4% across the board or average increase in BOCES service rates. So those are two of the things that we have, or those are several of the items that we've taken into consideration when we built our revenue side and also our expenditure side budget. This time I'll turn it back over to the superintendent. Yeah.
Okay. You're right. Awesome. It's just a simple demographic slide of our school district in comparison to the others by way of size. And last year it was informative, as it is each year, but I would point out that while the district is second largest in the component districts in our BOCES region, our district, like many of the districts, is showing some decline in student population. We looked at I should have copied the exact number, but I've given this report to the board earlier, and I think it's in excess of 23 to 24 students down from last year. And yet, with that loss of 20-some students, the point is the other districts are also losing some students as well. Earlier this evening, for those who were in the boardroom when we were talking about that demographic study, that's partly why we want to do a study, is to take a really good hard look at these enrollment numbers and then begin to figure out what to do with our buildings rather than be too quick with solutions to a problem that may not be. But that's a simple demographic slide. Now we talk about the state aid. Up here in your handouts, you have in your handouts the very same slides that we have up here. I don't know, depending on where you're seated, it might be easier to look at your paperwork. But these are the categories from which we receive state aid: foundation aid, BOCES, special ed, excess costs, et cetera, down the left-hand column. And up here you see what our 2008-2009 state aid budget amounts are for each item, as well as our projected state aid account. What I'd like to do is just spend a moment talking about the differences between the two, which leads us to an overall increase of our state aid approximately 4.18%. You remember I mentioned a few minutes ago foundation aid. Even though it shows an increase of $212,000, it's based on the foundation formula that the legislature passed, which basically froze foundation aid. So what you're looking at in that $212,000 is the recouped money, if you will, our district was able to get from
from previous reports on students and our student populations for which we should have gotten aid in previous years. That's part of the diligent work that's been done, as I said earlier, by in the special education department in particular. So we're seeing a 1.88% increase in foundation aid. It's not literally an increase, but it's new monies to us, so we're treating it as an increase. BOCES and special services, when the federal stimulus package was resolved, these cost centers that you see on the left-hand side either benefited or lost a little bit of money, and that's what you're seeing with all of these increases down the right-hand side. BOCES and special services area, aid increased to our district, $141,394, 17% increase over the previous year of $817,959. So that's where the additional money came from. Excess cost aid, additional costs for education for high-need students. That also, in our district, we benefited from the federal stimulus package being applied to the state formula to the tune of an additional $110,000. Building and building reorganization incentive, this was a big one for us. We're kind of in a little bit of a wonderment and amazement that this aid was available to us, but we'll take it because it's $150,000 that applies to the overall tax rate that we otherwise would not have been able to count on. There, I should quickly say that with the federal stimulus package that we've read about, we're all now anxiously waiting for the rules that come with it. Because after handing out checks like that, the government, as you've heard, the president and others, and Secretary Duncan, Arne Duncan, the U.S. Department of Education, has indicated that states are going to have to be even more transparent in terms of how it is spending the money that it is given to the school district. So there are very tight rules on where you can use the money and where you can't. It isn't just take $150,000 and go do something that you want to do with it. There are very tight controls that are going to come with that. And we're prepared for that, as all school districts are, but I want the public to know that that projects and concepts that might otherwise make sense to want to do when you have a little extra money may not be allowed to be included because it's federal money that's first-time infusion into the system. Transportation, including summer, picked up another $72,000 in change for that, $72,646. Hardware technology took a drop with the funding formula of $548. And software, library, textbooks decreased the state aid amount to an amount of $4,768. So what you see is a grand total projected 809, 16 mil, 310, 439, and the actual projected state aid that we are counting on is 16,992, 498 for an increase of 682.59. You remember I talked about that deficit reduction number was like 836,000, so almost all of that money was reinstated back into our budget, even though we planned our budget on losing it. And that's kind of why we think we're in pretty good shape now, because of that. Budget to budget, this gives you a breakdown of how the money is dispersed among the various cost centers, how the amounts change from one year to the next. And you certainly can read them. I won't read them all to you. But the biggest percentage of it, of any school budget, is tied up with benefits and salaries and a smaller degree, substitutes and home teaching and some overtime. But basically, that four group item up there, or items in four of the group of four, if you will, represents about almost 69.5% of any budget. So on a $37 million budget, close to, and understandably so, it's people driven. We are a people business. We bring services to children through people, and that would explain why that the biggest portion of any budget is going to be involved with salaries and benefits and overtime, etc. So there we have 69%+ of the budget. If you look at the increase or decrease in those cost centers, another point I would like to make, because this is going to bear out in just a moment, if 69% of the budget rose approximately 3.79% is accounted for that increase in 69% of the people, all the way down to the very bottom of that column, you'll see that our total budget expenditure for next year is rising 2.51%. So again, almost 70% of our costs are tied up with services and people that, on average, 3.79% increase. And yet we were able to take that 70% plus the other 30% and present to the U.S. voters a budget increase of only 2.51%. How does that happen? It happens because supervisors and administrators pulled in the reins, reduced expenditures whenever they could as we planned this year's budget, and also made projections and cuts of cost centers for next year to drive the budget to budget costs down even further. So we're very pleased with the effort put there. These are the cost centers. Again, I won't read them all to you, but on the left-hand side, you'll see how the state aid money is dispersed from building allocations per pupil. I will make a comment about this line because it does suggest, it is, suggests a decrease in amount of aid or amount of budget set aside for building allocations. It's a little bit of a misnomer because what we did this year through our budgeting and accounting practices is we moved money in centers that were used to give building allocations, and we put them under more appropriate headings. So while they go from budget to budget, it shows a decrease. The actual money didn't decrease. They're just redistributed in other cost centers. But we have to, you know, represent it as a decrease because it was last year a different number than this year. PE, health, and nursing, you can see the percentages of the total budget on the right, and you can see the percent of increase or decrease going down. And see, you'll notice that building support level is up 17%. So if you think, you know, there's 5% loss, almost 6% loss there, but there's a 17% increase here, it's because we shifted some dollars around to get them in their appropriate cost centers. There we go. Oh, district initiative capital project, we have none. So obviously, when you add up all the percentages of spending need for next year, we are looking at increasing our expenditures by 2.51%. We started this process, we were upwards in around 2.8, 2.9, and as with each passing cycle of examination of the budget and more conversations with administrators and closer monitoring of our cost centers, we've gotten it down to 2.51%. What's it all mean? Well, this is the page that most people are most interested in. This is our budget-to-budget projection, and very pleased to point out a couple of very significant numbers. Number one, tax levy. The proposed tax levy for 2009-2010 is exactly the same tax levy as we currently exist under. So we are looking at a 0% increase in tax levy. Last year's tax levy is this year's tax levy, or next year's tax levy. Equally important, 2.51% on the spending. And if we compare, put all those factors together in the line that really summarizes it, I think, pretty well. Our budget increases for next year amount to 2.51%. There's $0 tax increase. Our tax rate this current year is $16.91 per thousand. Our tax rate for next year is $16.91 per thousand. So we're not having any change in tax rate. Which, if you read papers and listen to different reporters and actually talk to other school districts, they're struggling being able to come, you know, really being able to say to their taxpayers they can deliver on that particular mention. I don't want to overemphasize the fact that the federal stimulus money is a help, no question about it. And we'll have it again for this year, no question about that. It's extremely important if you're here again at the same audience next year or beyond that, the third year out, please remember that money is gone. When that money goes, we will have to have looked at our organization, made good choices on our programming, count on additional revenue coming into the school district, which we have a lot of bright pictures of that occurring on our horizon. There are a lot of properties, commercial properties, I would quickly say, that will factor into our tax rolls in the next couple of years that should bring in a substantial recovery, if you will, from what we'll lose when the federal stimulus money goes. But all of those pieces are all acting in a dynamic washing machine, if you will, trying to make each year a budget that is acceptable to our voting public and sustainable and also provides the quality services for our kids that we've been trying to provide for many, many years. So there's our summary again on those pages. No tax increase, 0% increase on the levy, 2.51 overall increase in spending. Put in another term, and this is the chart I really like. If you trace back in between the beginning with 2006-07, we could have gone back further, but we just run out of space on the board to make the point. You'll see that voters way back in 2006-07 approved a tax rate at $18.72. The actual tax rate, once assessments were factored in, was 1786.
The following year, the approved tax rate dropped a little bit at 1840, but the actual tax assessments, if you will, tax rate was $17.22. In 08-09, it was 17.43. My point, you can see what's happening here. With each passing year, less and less of a tax rate has been requested of the voting public, and less of a tax rate has been required to actually fund the schools. And this year, we made the prediction, and that's what we've done with this budget presentation, is that we're predicting 16.91 again as our starting point for the tax rate. And that little circle is intended to represent that we fully expect that number to drop. I cannot tell you how much. It's going to depend on what happens with those commercial property assessments. Remember, we budgeted zero for the increases in the assessments. And we know there are multiple properties that once assessed, commercial properties, once assessed, are going to bring in revenue to the district that will allow us to apply it to the tax rate and drop it even lower. So it's a number, I don't really know what it is, but we are presenting to you tonight and to the public for the vote in May, a projected tax rate of 16.91 and declining. We won't necessarily know what it is for last year. These are the three mandated budget categories that we use in developing the school budget. Just another pictorial representation of how the money pie, if you will, is divided up. There's section one is the administrative cost, which represents 7.88% of the overall $37 million budget. Section two speaks to program costs, as well would be expected. Approximately 76% of the costs go to services for children, on behalf of or for children. And then the capital costs, buildings, lights, heat, gas, etc., amounts to about 16.15% of the overall budget. How much of the school budget is paid for by the local tax dollars? This year is an interesting slide compared to last year because there's a skew to the new direction, if you will. Last year, for those who might recall, that diagram would have shown more like a kind of a jagged piece of pie where it looked almost like 50-50. Well, again, the federal stimulus money and some of the cost-saving measures that we have undertaken have changed that. Our other revenue sources now make up 55% of the overall budget, and our taxpayers, in fact, are contributing 45% of that budget. Cost center allocation, just another pictorial to show you how within those costs they are divided out by function and purpose. PE athletics, you can see up, whoops, I'm going to push the wrong button here. Over here, 0.89% of the overall budget. School buildings, another 1.16. Educational technology, 1.59. You certainly can read these as I go around. Student services, 7.17. Understandably so. Paying off debt services, 8.12. Building support services. So the biggest chunk, as you can see up here in the purple portion of it, is that almost 69.58 or almost 70%. And salaries and benefits. People business, driving the system for kids requires people to do it, and that's where the greatest chunk of the budget would be located. We also, as a district, very proud of our continuous efforts for cost containment. That doesn't always meet the public's eye, but I always try to find at least one or two pieces or examples of how taking a careful look at where we can to save money and where it's prudent to save money, and then bring that, of course, to the board's attention as well, so that we can save money. A dollar saved here is a dollar we don't have to count on for next year. Here's three or four examples I've reminded our audience of. Print Manager Plus, it's computer software assistance. It allows us to set up accounts with users that will direct the district to monitor our use of paper. So because of that computer system, we expect and are seeing savings in both toner, paper, and electricity costs. Again, money not needed to budget next year because we're getting savings as a result of the purchase of that software. PowerSave, this reports idle computers to a central registry. So if you're in a lab or in classrooms and your computers are left on and nobody's following up to use that room for a period of time, the system understands that these computers haven't been turned off, so it will turn them on into a standby mode. Estimated cost for just that simple maneuver. It's like the lights in here. What's the cost of always turning the lights off when you leave the room? Incredibly, we're looking at our savings in 08-09 have been approximately $17,500 just from that little step, if you will. again, money that would be in a cost center next year that we know we can save by taking these efforts now and in the future. And I think I have a couple more. Yep, energy monitoring control systems. This is in the buildings and grounds area. 7 to 11% projected annual savings on our energy costs simply by regulating our night temperatures, shutting down exhaust fans when they're not needed, shutting down other systems that when they're not needed for extended periods of time. Someone made a comment coming through the door, it's a little chilly in here tonight, and perhaps it is, but it's your dollars working for you. In part, energy monitoring control systems are in place. The system would recognize that the auditorium hasn't been used for a significant period of time, so it does its job, and so we're saving dollars there. Energy curtailment specialist agreement. That's an agreement where we agree to cut back on our electric usage during peak power periods for the community and the region at large. And as a result of that, they monitor whether we pay back or cut back our usage, and then they give us a reimbursement for not using the electricity. So it's kind of like if you don't use it, you will gain something from it. And that's a little bit of a perk, but it's money that we would otherwise have to budget and spend next year. Two more items. Pre-purchase of supplies and materials. I mentioned that all of our administrators and supervisors are carefully monitoring this year's cost centers and beginning to project out savings for next year simply by not spending all of the, rather not reserving unexpended monies this year and putting it into the fund balance again. We want to try to get those accounts down to as close to zero as we possibly can. A great way to do that is to pre-purchase materials and supplies for next year and then subtract that out of next year's budget, which is what we have done. So the original budget proposal to the board was 2.8 in spending. That's how, in large part, that's how we were able to drop it down to 2.5. And special needs services, another piece. By providing a class at Beacon Elementary School next year, rather than services we would purchase at BOCES, the students that we would serve, I think it's up to 7 now, would bring in to the district in excess, or save the district in excess of $100,000. If we purchase the service from BOCES for those students, it would be $100,000+. By us doing it, we're saving $100,000+. It's a little bit higher than that. In summary, this budget is built on a 2.51% spending increase, zero tax increase, same tax rate as per year. I'm glad to entertain any questions. This point that everyone might have.
Hey, Scott?
Yes.
Mr. Superintendent, order.
That's fine.
Regarding your reference to the capital budget and district initiatives, you had zero.
I'm going to go find that one. Almost there. I think I know what you're talking about.
Oops. Okay, wait, like touch it.
Get close.
Budget summary.
So it's at the beginning.
Yeah, it is. Wow.
Hey, I'm sorry for waiting.
That's okay.
I was going to jump in.
Gary, can you take me up? Thank you.
Right there.
There we go.
District initiatives and capital projects.
Yep.
And that's at zero. Is that only in regards to an increase? Or is that simply zero?
Right.
Well, it's actually zero. We have nothing budgeted for that account. In previous years, we had budgeted for certain projects that were one-time projects expenditures. Last year, we had $60,000 budgeted. The previous year, we had $60,000 budgeted for certain maintenance projects. We don't have any projects budgeted for next year.
So, in transportation, that would cover the buses that you're planning on purchasing?
No. The purchase of the buses actually does not go through the budget because we buy them on credit or we issue a van for them. Okay. And so what happens is the first year we buy them, we have no payment on them, and then the next year, 5 years afterwards, we have a debt payment.
Oh, really?
So then that goes up as a principal and interest payment under that service category.
But so that's been the practice?
That's been the practice for every year. We replace 4 buses.
Okay.
And it's been the practice for 7 years in the district.
When the budget is presented again, this budget is presented, you will see other propositions that are made available. One of those propositions is on the purchase of the buses. It's set aside from the actual budget. It's a proposition requesting voter approval.
So where you see debt service and other costs there,
that's where that resides.
The bonding of the capital project and the buses previously purchased, that's our annual payments that we're making on that.
What about field, football field. Isn't that a $240,000 expenditure?
It's not built in this budget.
Okay.
We will have, there will be a proposition presented to the voters relative to the bleachers for the athletic field or the complex, if you will. And then in subsequent, either through next year, careful monitoring, et cetera, if our expenditures allow us to find some coins to be able to start working toward renovation of the field, we would do that. But we want to make sure that the voters, the board felt very strongly, wanted the voters to have the opportunity to vote separately on the function of the field, if you will, starting with the bleachers. So there will be a proposition just on the bleachers.
That's fair. Thank you.
Yep.
Yes. Quick question. On the substitute and home teaching pay, if you break those out separately, are they both negative numbers or is one positive and one negative?
Okay. I'm going to ask you to help me with that one.
The third line down, substitute and home teaching pay,
they're
lumped together. If you were to break out those separately, are they both negative numbers?
Just check it out.
Yeah, if you give me a second, I can find out. I think they're all in the same... category that we do lump them together, but let me just.
So the following question would be: so is substitute teaching demand dropping? Why would everything else go up but not that one?
I'm going to take a stab at the hard numbers, but the concept I can speak to: home teaching pay would not change. It's a fixed rate for home teaching. It's the number of students that, and the number of days, if you will, that would be a variable. Uh-huh. It's possible that there are, we're projecting less need for home teaching next year than this current year. That's one possible explanation. But also the substitute pay as well, the substitute use. We monitor our substitute use year to year, and when we get a trend becoming apparent to us that we budgeted more for substitutes than we really needed, that money, again, goes back to the fund balance if we don't have a place for it. So our sense is, well, let's reduce it based on the trend as opposed to have money left over at the end of the year in that cost center. How close did I come with the way we have it configured?
Well, you're right on the dot, actually. The home teaching the home teaching line item on the budget actually remained flat from one year to the next. The substitute category actually was the place where we experienced a reduction. And it gets a little complicated, but underneath, the overtime and additional pay actually went up by $11,000, and it's almost a wash. And we had what we had done is, in our transportation department, we, in the previous year, we were hiring some substitute drivers to cover certain types of runs, and those runs are now under their additional runs. They're not part of the regular transportation salaries, but we have people to now cover those runs this year. Mm-hmm. So it's just being, the superintendent had mentioned that we had shifted some costs, so we're not budgeting it for it under substitutes because we actually have people in the positions now doing it, which is why it's almost exactly the $10,000 loss in substitute pay and the $11,000 increase in additional pay is actually from the transportation department.
Just in response to the question from the audience, we have no capital projects, but we do have an Excel project. It isn't part of this. There are things to be started this summer, but it isn't part of this. It's money we don't have to pay for. So it isn't in our budget.
You remember picking up on that comment last year, there was a proposition to approve Excel, the Excel proposition, as it were, and the community voted overwhelmingly in support of proceeding with that. So we literally, today we had walkthroughs, I think earlier this afternoon, of subcontractors and GCs walking through the Cumberland Head as well as the main campus here, getting ready to begin installation and work and renovation, if you will, based on that Excel project. I think that's in excess of $6 million for which we were providing from the state that money to be bonded out or spread out over a 20-year aid payment. So it's really, I don't recall the exact number, but it really is a minuscule amount each year, literally under 100. It's a very, very small amount on that $6 million project. And we'll start seeing the renovations beginning as soon as we can get the bids let and awarded, the board to approve them, and then where we can work around the students, they're going to start working around the students even before we close the school year. But definitely this summer will be a pretty busy place out of Cumberland Head and the main campus with some activity going on with a lot of infrastructure work.
Mm-hmm.
If I understand right now, the bleachers and the football field is all a separate referendum for a vote.
Yep.
I'm guessing with the economic times the way they are, that's going to get voted down. I hope not. But my question is, the bleachers are gone. There's nothing out there. What is there a plan if that does get voted down? What we do next year? And do we have money to provide something for the students to have their own football field, or are we going to be in the same boat trucking kids around the North Country to play their home games?
I think we've discussed it. I think we've discussed in previous meetings that the actual field is probably not what's been deemed dangerous. There's no bleachers there. I'm sure there will be further discussion on it, but I think the initial reaction is if the bleachers are voted down, we will try to secure Bailey Avenue again for a year. Not what we want to do either.
Why would you not put it in and try to get it in the budget so when the budget passes, that gets passed too? I mean, that's something that means a lot to a lot of kids.
Well,
really unfortunate that it, that
you,
got
you're right,
out
and I totally agree with you on that. But our thinking on
our kids are going to pay the price as they always do. If you look at where the reductions were, it's and that overall cost.
You mentioned the economic times, and that's what we were looking at. With the economic times, we needed to allow the taxpayers to make the decision on the bleachers.
What are the costs of the bleachers?
Not to exceed $240,000.
Not yet. Not to exceed $240,000. And the proposition is to take that out of existing fund balance. That's what we're looking for permission for, is to use $240,000 out of existing fund balance to replace the bleachers. That's how the proposition will read.
Couldn't you have repaired the old bleachers for a lot less?
They were not repaired.
Had a company come and study it instead of just jumping a gun and having somebody remove them. That was awful quick, I think.
We had our building and grounds manager did have them inspected. He's able to do that in his position, and they weren't savable. If you want to take a 30-year-old metal and put brand new pressure treated lumber on it, would have cost us almost the same amount, and you're still stuck with old metal. And it wasn't up to safety codes, and we had someone get hurt on it. So if we hadn't pulled them, we'd have the community complaining that we were going to get sued because somebody got hurt. So no matter how you look at it, we save money by pulling them. So, and the other question was, why are we doing it with the bleachers? Well, it's because the budgetary times are so tough, and the first thing people always ask, well, why didn't you ask us? Well, if the public tells us we don't want to buy the bleachers, then we're not going to do it. We're representatives of the community. So, but there are consequences to that. We won't have football here. We'd have to go somewhere else.
Did you have a meeting on that when you made the decision to pull those bleachers?
Yes.
I missed it.
We did.
Wasn't advertised.
What qualifies the person that made the decision to evaluate the structural integrity of the bleachers? Are they a structural engineer? Yeah. Are they a structural engineer? Did you guys have a civil engineer evaluate it or do an analysis on it? Or was it just because he felt that they were structurally sound?
His position is building the ground. He's been doing it for I don't know how many years. And
the question is structural integrity, not right. Grounds.
Well, it's
how do you qualify?
Safety.
Okay. As an engineer.
There was code violations because you have to have rails going up and down each of the...
Then we have soccer bleachers that don't have that, so I don't understand.
It's just the amount of money that would have cost to change it over was not feasible.
Whatever the reason, but don't say it's because of the rails when we have soccer bleachers that don't have rails. Okay, you got to be consistent.
There's a height requirement.
There's a height requirement.
There's a height requirement.
Well, it sounds like there must have been some evaluation, and that's good.
There was evaluation that was done, right, and we had a report come back to us and said that they are not worth trying to recover, and that they were a safety problem, and the board made a decision that night to pull them, that we didn't want the liability out there.
Okay.
So is there a process that was done during the evaluation that then is made public so that it's seen how the process has been done?
The process to which?
To evaluate.
To evaluate?
The bleachers.
I guess as a board member, sitting as a board member, we are given information and have to work off that information to the best of our ability. Processes not necessarily always go out, but in this case, we are going to be asking the public that whether or not they would like to replace them. Is that what you're talking about?
No, I think the process, what you're saying about having someone evaluate is proper, I'm glad you guys are doing that. In defense to you guys, mm-hmm. how do you protect yourselves that the evaluation process that you are trusting someone else to do has the credentials to give you that proper evaluation, other than just someone's got experience? I mean, you know, if I contract somebody in my firm to do mm-hmm. an engineering analysis for some of the work I do, I'm not just going to say, well, I'm just going to trust so-and-so. There has to be some sort of a evaluation criteria, has a documentation presented with those qualifications for me to be able to say yes or no. So did they do that for you?
The process that was done was not done in a formal manner where information was brought forward and given to the board in a printed form, if that's what you're asking.
The codes that you're mentioning, the mechanisms for making the decision that you're talking about, the codes and evaluation,
yes.
the checklist to qualify that, did they give that to you so you can be sure that you guys aren't liable for making a proper decision?
No, everything was done in-house. We trusted the person that we had to do that. That is, and then we removed it.
And then again, if we hadn't done it and someone else got hurt, we'd be paying big money.
Oh, I agree.
Because at that point, once someone got hurt, then we knew about it. Then we'd be dangled.
Well, there's a difference between continuing to use it and not allowing anybody to use it until you have a proper assessment, right?
Personally, I didn't know that it was unsafe until we were told someone fell.
Sure.
Now, at that point, now we know there's a problem and we had it assessed.
Right.
And our guy said, it's still dangerous, so not as to incur legal costs for the district, we acted.
Yeah, there's insurance liability. I mean, there's a whole
and
lot
if
of
we'd have waited 2 to 3 weeks to get somebody to come in there and check it, someone had fallen off.
Well, you could have closed them down and broke it off. You don't have to jump the gun. Your man, is he an engineer? He might be an excellent worker. He could have been there for 40 years.
Well, you know, I'd like to answer that, though, because here's the point. We hire people who are qualified in their fields, and if you want us to go out every time we make a decision and pay somebody to give us a decision.
Well, you're talking $200,000 versus $10,000. Big difference.
So what I'm saying is, if you think the issue is, do we have to tell every time we do anything, do we have to get permission and get an outside professional, well, then you're going to have to pay for that.
Well, we're going to have to pay for these bleachers, aren't we?
No, you don't have to. You get to
vote. Oh, then our kids aren't going to be able to play football here.
Well, that's...
It's a double-edged sword. You've got to jump the gun on that.
You're right.
He's still talking. The point is, you're getting the choice. You never got the choice before.
If you would have shut them down for a month, called a special meeting, had the parents come and go, hey, we'll put 40 grand, 50 grand, 100 grand to fix them, or get new ones. You didn't give us that option. You took an option away from us. That's what I'm saying.
He
should have been brought forward.
He's right. He's right in saying that you've got to allow people to make decisions that they're in position to do so.
Exactly.
The question is someone in Buildings and Ground qualified to make the structural evaluation of the bleachers? That's the question.
Just one other comment. Structurally, really didn't have anything to do with it.
The
bleachers are railings needed to be put in, stairs needed to be put in. You have to have a backing on it and a front on them. There can be no open spaces anymore. It wasn't that those bleachers could have been fixed for any amount of money. They couldn't have been. The bleachers were physically not able to be used anymore because they could not be revamped to meet the current codes. You can't cut stairs into the bleachers where there was no room for them. The bleachers could not be used anymore.
I'm sure accurate. I think what would help with the community is to have that evaluation discretized so that people are informed of the due diligence you actually did, because I'm sure you guys did it, and it was established and it was done. That eliminate all the rumor mill and inaccurate.
I think the real quick. I think the issue here was that it took till somebody fell off the bleachers before the code inspector decided to say, whether he was certified or not, that they're not fit to stay up. Now, this individual, had he been certified, or if he was certified, why didn't he say before that individual fell? Why wasn't he in a position to know before that individual fell that these bleachers were not within a safe structural condition? So I think that's the point that the gentleman here is trying to make. In addition, I'd have to agree with it, because we did wait until an individual fell, and suddenly, fact is, they're structurally unsound. They weren't before that individual fell, and had that individual not fallen, I don't think this board or us would even be saying that they're structurally unsound right now.
You don't understand what we were saying. I didn't know that they were not up to code or whatever. I had no clue.
But the guy you're relying on making a decision, his job, obviously didn't recognize that. So is he qualified, is what he's saying?
Yeah, well, you made that.
He's saying the guy you're saying is qualified to put him down wasn't qualified enough to recognize it before something happened. So is he qualified or not? So he was qualified to make the decision to bring it down, but not qualified to prevent it to happen.
Well, that's what he's saying. We didn't know there was a code violation after somebody fell.
So he wasn't qualified to recognize a code violation.
No, that's not what I'm saying. I said until someone went and got a lawyer and said, we're going to do something about this, and then they brought all the information, I had no clue.
I don't blame you.
No, if you think we walk around the school every day and look to see if everything's up to code, we don't.
No, but you're saying you have someone qualified to make a decision.
But when you find out, you have to rely on the people you have.
But you're saying he was qualified to make the decision. And so what he's saying,
I don't understand.
I'm paraphrasing what he's saying.
What you're saying is we should add a staff member.
Yeah. No.
You should have known it wasn't up to code.
No, that's not what I'm saying.
What we need is somebody to go through the school.
I think what you should have done is taken some time
and
made an informed decision and not a staff decision.
Are these chairs up to code?
I think that's what people are.
It's going to get to a point where it's getting so.
You're right. You're absolutely right. You can't check cameras
about 8 or 9 different layers. As a board member, this is a volunteer operation.
Yes, but okay? My point
is,
if you're qualified to make the decision to bring it down,
this board had to make a decision on whether we keep those bleachers and use them anymore, mm-hmm. which they were. We had an accident, actually two, not one, two.
Yeah, I didn't know about the second one. That's the communication part.
Once I don't think you're to blame for the decision. I think what I'm concerned about is the people that make a decision for you that you're relying on.
It are people that we are hiring as a board, mm-hmm. putting into that position to do that type of work. It was brought forward. Mm-hmm. If it wasn't brought forward quicker, that's something that just fell through the cracks.
Sure, that happens.
It happens. Yeah. As a board member, we're brought information. We dealt and worked on the information. We moved forward. The bleachers, we felt, were not safe enough to move forward. We're thinking about safety of people that are coming into the game.
Right.
Okay? It's not safe, so we pulled the bleachers and moved the game. Simple as that. We tried to come up with something for homecoming and line up everything we could and do what we possibly could to help the kids.
I don't blame you for making a safety conscious decision. I don't think anybody does. I would have done the same thing. I think more of the question is, was it too quick a decision, and was the evaluation process accurate enough?
Well,
I think it was as accurate as we needed for what we're doing. And I think we need to. We're supposed to be in a budget here. So, and we're kind of getting our wheels spun on other issues. But we do have the.
Well, it is part of the budget because it's money that you're asking taxpayers.
Yes, but you're asking about water that's under the dam now. We have moved forward. We now have a proposition forward to replace the bleachers at fund balance.
I don't think he's trying to argue with you. I think he's trying to help. We're giving you information when you start talking to the public that you're ready to answer the questions. Because the public's upset about it. So
I know they're very upset
about it. Stan, just take it as good information and be prepared for your
meetings.
That's
all
we're
saying. Can we improve the process so that next time?
Yes, we can. We can improve the process. Okay, that is probably in your position, adding more staff to be able to go around and make those judgments. We have staff here that are doing the best they can at everything. What happens in a school day is multiple layers, multiple layers from the time the child gets on the bus to the child gets off the bus. There are thousands of processes that those kids go through. Okay, and we're sitting here looking at each and every one of those processes. We hire staff to do the best they can possibly do and bring the information forward.
I'm not saying hire more staff.
Once that information is brought forward, the board
The public deals. Wants to see the process of that the decision was made with. That's what the public wants. How did the decision come?
You know, it's great to have all this information, but There's board openings open. If you people are so concerned, why don't you run for the board? Because you seem to think that you'd be able to see all this stuff.
Wow.
I mean, I'm spending hours and hours a month.
That's pretty sarcastic.
No, I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about that. But saying, if you think you can do a better job, run for the board.
And why don't you resign if you think you can do something?
I know I'm doing the best I can, but it's easy to sit in the public and just throw darts all day long.
You did it many times
so
when you were in the
run.
Public.
Hold on.
The
question stands. Show us the mechanism that you used. Let's, to make the decision.
Let's go back to budget questions only.
But the public deserves to know how
budget
the process is done.
Only.
Forget it. They're doing their own thing. They are elected.
What is the fund balance? The $1.75 million is taken out for this year. What is the fund balance? The remainder of it.
Boy.
I don't have that spreadsheet with me, unfortunately. I hate to give you an inaccurate. I think we're currently.
But your question is, what is the undesignated fund balance?
Right. What is what's left in the fund balance?
After which point? Does anyone have that spreadsheet?
After the 1.75 for this year's taken out.
That's a good question.
I think I have that number off the top of my head.
Right.
Certainly, I think you'd understand. I would not want to give you an inaccurate number.
Between 3 and 4 million?
Yes.
So 240,000 out of that isn't really a great deal of that fund balance.
No.
So if people are interested, is it noted on there, you know, when you do the proposition, is it specified that there is enough money within the fund balance and extra to cover the bleachers so that people would be maybe more inclined to vote for it considering it's not really going to raise their taxes? It may in the long run because they're using it to do that rather than maybe help the budget out next year. But
not going to raise your taxes this year. It's money that's already been collected, and we're just asking for
permission to spend
the money that has been collected.
I think telling people how much is in there.
But I think
we can tell them in a flyer, but we can't put it in the actual proposition. That's the language you can use to put a proposition up for a vote. But we will surely be putting out brochures from this point on. Next meeting, we will be adopting the actual budget itself, the budget document that you saw tonight. And after that, there are state requirements that we will be sending information out. There will be flyers that will be coming out, trifolds, and that information will be covered in there. And we will stress the fact that this is...
If people are really concerned, I think that's what they need to explain to the people.
Yes.
Are so unhappy with the bleachers that, you know, that
we're trying to replace them.
The people are willing to vote to have it used for that
purpose. I did look up the number, and I did a quick calculation. I think it's more like 2.9 million.
Yeah, it's just under 2.
Sorry for not having that right away.
But okay. That's still a comfortable buffer for us to be able to do that.
Right.
And you're right. That's a message that has to.
It may be needed in the future for something else. Yep. Also, you have to sound.
Well, it's going to cost us a few days if all of a sudden the school boiler goes down, or a chimney collapses. I mean, unforeseen.
One of the points is, and I agree with you exactly. Which is one of the points that I made earlier with the federal stimulus money is that again, in 2 years, the federal stimulus money that we count on to help save taxes today. Will be gone. School districts all across the country are going to be asked to then decide what to do with the inflationary cost of doing business for the previous 2 years when that net, if you will, is taken away. Part of the balancing act with that, and you integrate on the tail, is how much fund balance do you bring into as a hedge against that day when that money is going to be gone? And what we're trying to do, among other things, with this budget, because I'm trying to save a little bit tonight, is to try to maintain that balance in such a way that our spending is kept down, our tax rates are as low as we can possibly keep them, and in part it's because we're using some of the fund balance to as a hedge against those otherwise costs. 2 years from now, and quite frankly, I think we would all have a lot to worry about. It's not just a community question, but in 2 years, if the economy doesn't turn around the way everyone in the whole country is hoping it will, we'll be one of many districts, only we will be the story 2 years later than most of our neighbors are telling. Most of our neighbors are starting that story now with reductions and cutback in programs and services because they didn't have a fund balance and or they didn't benefit as we have this year and next year with the federal stimulus money. But we're no different 2 years from now. Unless those revenues that I talked about, those commercial properties, and there are several, and you can look around the community and begin to see what's being constructed and erected in various parts of our taxing jurisdiction. When those revenue sources become a part of our district tax roll, they become new revenue streams to offset loss of state aid. Now, I'm calling loss of state aid meaning 800,000 plus that I've already talked about several times tonight. We think we're on a cycle for the community to keep coming back each budget cycle. This year, next year, and the third year is going to be the critical one. We will know as we head into that second year out, did the revenue streams pick up, not only in the country, but for our immediate area. If they do, we will not be hurt nearly as much as some of our, unfortunately, some of our neighbors will. If they don't, we will be one district 3 years removed from the problem that other districts are experiencing as we speak tonight. So it's to that end that we try to do that balance.
You have to the stimulus. You had to you used 1.75 of your fund balance.
With the stimulus, actually, we used less than with that. With the stimulus projection was 1.5 million, the amount that the board has approved each year our fund balance. We were counting on a higher tax rate. The question becomes where do you go? You drop the tax rate by getting more fund balance. Keep the fund balance low, you increase the tax rate, and we knew that our projected spending was, as I said, 2.51. Costs of doing business were going to be 2.51, regardless of where the revenue came. The blessing for this year and next year was that the federal stimulus package popped another 800 into mix. So we could keep the fund balance healthy enough, not raise the tax rate.
Well, you can't keep it too healthy according to the state.
Nope, not forever. Not forever. And in part, that's where the additional increases come in. That's why we took even a little bit more this year than previous years, is again, that balancing, trying to reduce the crystal ball. It's not a perfect science.
I just got one more. It's budget.
Yep,
Very good.
Personally, I think I'm concerned about the existing negotiations going on with the teachers. And in regards to the budget and your projected employee benefits and salaries and the like, have you factored in any kind of increase, and is it realistic? Is it close to what they're asking for?
I couldn't get into negotiation pieces because they are under negotiation and actually going now to fact finding. But the projection. A projection that the board, and I'm speaking with the board listening obviously to the statement, the projection that the board feels comfortable saying this would be an amount that if it was to come true, can this be included in this budget? We've included that number in this budget.
Because like the difference, I don't need to
no,
educate
we've
you,
included
but the difference between 0.2% far outweighs a $240,000 cost of bleachers.
The fact,
and I know that's not in the budget, but I'm saying we're watching our pennies,
you're back.
That $240,000 is easy to come by, regardless of the budget surplus. If we're at least negotiating in the good faith of the community members and not letting the tail wag the dog in terms of the unions, which I am totally for. Don't get me wrong, but credibility is very important. And I'm going off on a tangent.
Well, that's all right.
Secondly, I'd like to hear from Mr. Hay on occasion in regards to the bleacher issue. You know, and I know we can't talk about it now. I know. He would not much. Rhetorical question. I'm done.
He didn't even know until they were gone.
On the budget question. So,
I mean, that was a little scary to me. I mean, I used to teach here. I'm retired now, but that the whole idea of giving your negotiations less money so you can get your bleachers is a little scary.
I got a question for you, Mr. Board. You had mentioned the federal stimulus money. Do you have any idea how the government is going to make us spend that money? Have you heard anything?
Not in all of the areas. We're getting a good sense for IDEA funds, which, by the way, is separate. Is $300,000. We benefited with $300,000 more dollars in IDEA money. That is not part of the overall budget. It's another $300,000 to offset the cost of special needs education for students. There, they're getting, literally every day, we're getting more updates from the state United States Department of Education on what you can and can't do with it. Strongly encouraged, obviously, is not to buy or supplant your services with people, because when the money's gone, your local taxpayers have the people left to keep funding. So it's one-time purchases. So we're getting guidelines on the kinds of things that the money can be spent doing. As far as the other major portions of it, they're still working, meaning the federal government is still working on the details. There's two payments that will be coming to school districts across the country. The first payment will come with it a lot of accounting. I mentioned transparency a little bit earlier. There'll be a lot of accounting of what did you do with the money, and that's when the guidelines are coming out. When the money comes, the guidelines come with it. Then you report what you did with it. Then comes the second payment if you're, in fact, following the guidelines. So it's a long answer to a real simple question. We don't know definitively. I could not tell you standing here, can you do this with it in this cost center? Don't know yet. But there are people in the federal government working around the clock to break the rules for us.
Speaking of like money that might be a one-time thing, how many staff, like teachers and staff members, we have under grants that if the grants go away, we could use the staff? You don't often know how many of that.
Folks covered by grants, Ryan. Just even the desk thing, because I know we have a spreadsheet for
them. Somewhere around the number of 17 or 18 individuals that are inside grants.
So if the grants happen to diminish or go away, these staff members either have to disappear or they have to be absorbed into our budget.
And or, well, I don't, not to split hairs, but the individual staff members may not be the individuals who are absorbed.
Obviously,
not the same
but
number.
But the number is the same thing.
It's not necessarily that person.
Somebody.
It's
not that people. But
yeah,
it,
one of two things.
Bodies
play.
Play.
One of two things, well, one of three things happens. Either a greater amount of fund balance is applied to keep programs going that were otherwise funded through another source, or the program itself is discontinued. Because it would otherwise be required to be funded by the school district, or the overall cost to keep that program and that person goes into the general budget, which would have the effect on spending, which has the effect on tax.
Well, again, fund balance, once it usually fund balance for a one time expenditure and staffing.
Correct.
It's a recurring expense, so that would be on a temporary fix.
It would be a temporary fix. Correct.
Is pre-K in this budget? Because I have heard rumors that pre-K was going to be eliminated because of the grant going away. Is pre-K still planned?
You're going around.
The universal pre-K program is grant funded, and that is not included in the general fund budget. There was some talk about shifting more expenditures to the local taxpayers, but when the governor and the legislator agreed on this year's budget, they eliminated what they were proposing. So there's no change this current year.
And had that, if I could stay with numbers one more moment, and had that occurred, meaning that the governor was successful and the legislator approved moving UPK costs into general ed, our impact would be
$37,000.
$37,000 to the general budget.
So we are having you.
The universal pre-K program
stays.
Has not changed.
Don't we have to reapply every year, though? Didn't they just? Don't we apply for that annually?
Yeah. We
you do, but money, this prognostication of will there be money when you apply, that's been removed. There was some talk of, no, we're going to take that away. If you want it, fund it yourself, or portions of it. The legislative process did its crunching with the governor, and they came up with something. We're going to leave UPK alone again for a number.
But it is something to consider down the line, because I think in this day and age, it's a very needed program.
Well, you know, research, many people know, early intervention in most things in life is better than postvention after things have happened. Questions? Well, again, I'll reiterate the offer earlier. Again, as a result of the presentation, we feel that there's an opportunity for the civic groups or clubs, etc., that would couldn't be here tonight, or perhaps you would like to have them here in the presentation. I will make myself available as time will permit to work around Jay's schedule to meet with any group and talk about the budget in greater detail. And it doesn't have to be nearly as formal as PowerPoints or anything. I can bring your extra copies with me. We can pull up a chair around a table, four, five, six people, and just talk. And I'll do my best to explain it to you to that group.
Just this process, do you normally reach out to them, the civic organizations, anyway?
Yeah. We did last year. Did a number of presentations, actually, to various clubs as we approach the budget cycle time. And just I'm making the available that you're with this audience. And if you know of anybody connected to those folks, please pass the word on. I'm very willing to still do that. And make it ready to do that. Okay.
We should go back to the beginning. We should finish up our report.
We never came out of go back to the meeting, right? So cool. We don't have to vote to go back.
You had additional committee assignments.
You have to read them, right? I can't find my
I think we should go back to number four. I think we should.
We're going to pick it back up on. Yeah, Leonard's here.
Can we go back to number four first, then pick it up where we left off?
Yes, that's where we're going right now. Okay. We're going back to four.
Thank you.
So I'd like to draw all board members back. We did three, so we'll now go to four. And superintendent's reports. And I also left a bullet there for comments on the budget, because next meeting is we're adopting the budget. So we really need to make sure we give any other changes of direction or whatever the board would like to do this evening, so that we can have a board packet for vote next meeting. And again, I'll remind board members, it's in the third Tuesday, not the fourth, because of...
Is that the 23rd?
21st. Okay, turn this forward.
Thank you. A couple of informational items and then some good news items. Let me start with the informational first. I'm looking, for those who can see from the audience, this is a pamphlet put out by the for a student panel discussion, which was held on March 26th in the auditorium, sponsored by our Center for Diversity, Pluralism, and Inclusion. And that was moderated by, that panel discussion was moderated by Kevin Pearson, who's associated with Plattsburgh State University, as well as a number of audience, general community members who attended the session, as well as students who served as panelists on the program. And it was a great opportunity for our students to begin to talk about the issues that are very important to our district, being the issues of diversity, gender biases, bullying, socioeconomic status used as measuring sticks for achievement or movement through school populations, just a host of wonderful topics that have begun. And this was just one adjunct piece of the center that was established this past school year. So I just want to bring that to your attention. There will be others that will be advertised in the future and will appear on the district webpage, as well as probably, I'm looking for Garth, probably on the Bolton electronic bulletin board as well. So stay tuned for that. Second item, very pleased. I made mention of it earlier. Our school district website is changing effective April 9th. You will see immediately easier navigation, consistency in the design, more site content for students and parents as well as staff, enhanced community email system for school-based communication with our community at large, and a host of other features. I've asked Gary to prepare in one or more of our future board meetings spotlight on the website alone, because the changes that have been made are really incredible. Access to as much information as you could possibly have a desire to learn about and know about at the click of a mouse. And so he's preparing as we speak, once we go online with this, to think about a spotlight presentation over another couple board meetings from now and show the board exactly how, as board members, you can navigate to get your information directly, as well as community and parents and everyone else. Just a wonderful, wonderful addition and upgrade to our website. Very pleased with the work done there. A couple of good news items. I have in front of me a letter from John Bernardi, who is the executive director of the United Way of Clinton and Essex counties, congratulating the contributors from our organization, meaning our school district, for our level of contributions on the behalf of the United Way campaign that was held recently. And you can't see it, but this is a gold color, and that's significant because it represents this particular kind of emblem is awarded to organizations that contribute $1,500 or more toward the United Way. So the exact amount is not listed, but again, the community spoke up, the school organization addressed the United Way campaign, and we have another campaign notification to put on the plaque that's presented and made available in the public. And the final good news piece of information, Mountain Lake PBS recently sponsored a Champlain Chronicles writing contest, say that three times, to celebrate the 400th anniversary of the discovery of Lake Champlain. Sixth grade French students in Catherine Costanzi's class researched important events during the summer, during Samuel D. Champlain's life, and then they wrote newspaper articles about it. And as often happens when our kids put their minds behind a grindstone, good things, they were identified, two of our students, there were 12, that were identified for having submitted pieces for consideration, and two of our students, and you're going to have to help me, Chelsea Bajalko? Bajalko. So I didn't need that help after all. Chelsea Bajalko and Anna Stitt were two students who received honorable mention in that competition. There were, again, a total of 13 students enrolled in the competition. Each of those students will receive a Borders gift certificate and the opportunity to read their entries at the Mountain Lake Contest Party to be held in June. So congratulations to our students. And those are my update items. Thank you.
Okay, we're back to the budget piece. Is there any other additional questions, comments? And we do have one other item issue, and that is with the class that's being brought over. What's the board's decision on that piece for the BOCES?
This is just the elementary class, not the high school class?
Elementary. It's a class at the elementary
level. We're not doing the high school class?
We're not doing the high school class?
Leanne, help me.
The high school class.
The high school
The job training class?
Yep. Go ahead, Liam, please. Thank you.
That's one of the other pieces.
So there's no budget implication, you're saying?
There's a budget savings.
Because the staff's already here. There's no
right.
You're
right.
Absorbing them into your regular staff
program. The savings, if you will, come from the expenses we would otherwise be paying to BOCES for six, seven. I forget the number. I think it's up to seven students that we would otherwise be asking BOCES to provide that service to. We will be able to provide it in-house with the addition, as I pointed out in previous board sessions, of a staff member and a 0.4 psychologist, and still have a savings, a net savings of over $100,000.
Frank? Yep, that savings was pointed out in the budget process
yes.
a few minutes ago. That's that $100,000.
Yep. Yep.
And the question is, do we want to move forward with that, with
correct.
That process?
Correct. We still haven't. I don't have a board decision on where you want to go with that.
That's well, it'd be kind of foolish not to move forward.
It is.
It's in the budget.
Yes, it's in the budget. As far as the savings, but I want to make sure the board is all okay with that.
I think it would be foolish for this board to say no.
Do you want an informal
well, I got a few more questions.
Okay.
This is for 9th and 10th graders only, correct?
Yeah, I just want to make sure that the understanding is the teacher, we're looking for a new teacher, elementary level, and the current existing staff takes care of the high school.
Okay, so this won't have any effect.
So the 0.4 psychologist is
what?
At the elementary level.
Yes.
Go ahead.
Maybe it'll help if I said that we're looking at two separate.
Yes.
There are two different issues we're
yes.
talking about. I think
yes.
There
we go.
No. I understand.
The high school, with our current staffing, what we'd be doing is extending instead of a half-day program and then sending a half-day over to CBS, they would stay all day and night.
Yes.
That's the question I wanted answered. That's the question I wanted answered. The 11th and the 12th graders. Because those are the ones that are on career path. They're the ones out in the job market.
Absolutely.
Yep.
We're taking some baby steps.
All right. Thank you,
Kai. So the board is okay with that piece.
So that 0.4 psychologist goes to the elementary level, not the high school level.
And the 0.4 has, it's not a benefits. It's a 0.4 position.
Well, so I'm concerned it's going to save money. I'm for it.
Okay.
I got another question. One more. This is my last one. it more or less pertains to next year's budget, but it has to do with this one. Is there plans to take those 9th and 10th graders and develop a program for the 11th and 12th grade? Is that what you're looking at?
So, excuse me, the 0.4 yes. is contractual? Is that just they're paid hourly? You said no benefits.
It's probably would be a contracted service for the 0.4.
So does that mean that it's going to be automatically reviewed the following July?
Yes.
With other annual appointments?
Yes. 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 Because in the whole special education realm, what you hope occurs with programming and student needs and services line up the way they should, the goal would be to sustain programs for students who need them sustained, but also to have students not need services, therefore not needing to be a part of a program. That's always in flux. That's one of the hardest things to do in special education is predict student need against BOCES services against what we can do. But what Leanne has presented and drafted, and I drafted in this budget, is an opportunity, if you will, to find a cost-effective way to deal with what we know to be our issues for next year. And after next year, we look at it again and see if there's another way to tweak it a different direction to save more money.
I just have one more question, and I apologize if you talked about it in the presentation and this about the psychologist. Then I'm assuming you have some projection for a number of kids or number of hours that this person is going to fill to come up to that 0.4. Or
yeah,
so they can be evaluated in a year.
They'll be directly associated with the IEP reviews and annual reviews, so there'll be actual counts to be able to reflect who they served. Yes.
I'm good.
Yes, George.
So I understand the special ed services are hard to anticipate from year to year. Would that be something that this advisory service group could, are they going to give us projected enrollments for special ed students too, or are they just giving us a flat? projected enrollment.
No, actually, they're going on actual student counts as opposed to those services that come with the student. They made a point of saying that some studies look at making that kind of guesstimation of who might need this service versus how many students do you literally have in your building. So I don't anticipate, long answer, I don't anticipate they're making a breakout of special needs students versus regular ed students when they do the study.
Okay, so that's not
that'll be our programming decision in-house. Now that we know we have 14, 15, or 20, or whatever that number is, what does that information have to do with the outcome of the study? Do we need additional room or not need additional room, a special room or not a special room?
Can we afford to keep those students here next year?
Keep them here or purchase from BOCES? Good questions.
Okay, any other questions, comments? We're ready to move this budget forward to, unless we incorporate any changes along the line from any of our outside agencies, we'll move this for our vote on the 21st. If you do have anything, please email the superintendent.
Please.
And copy the board so we can know ahead of time. But it looks like we're getting closer to adopting the budget. Ron?
I'm happy to report that I have nothing to report.
Excellent. Thank you.
Very important.
We're happy to receive that. We're happy to report.
Can we get to do that?
The next is the third bullet for the additional items. We'll go back to that. I have three more committees that have to be put together. One of them is the Committee of Nine. The other one is a committee on the curriculum, because it runs out this year, and we have to rewrite our curriculum. Not exactly sure on exactly the call name on that, but it's working with our adoption of our curriculum destiny. And the shared decision-making on the administrative level. Karen has, when it was mentioned earlier, Karen asked to, or did agree to volunteer to sit on the Committee of Nine. And I'm going to need three board members for each of these, so you've got a chance to pick a pick your poison, basically. So is there anybody else? I need two other board members to sit on the committee. George, you did last year.
No, I'll sit on
Okay. Thank you.
How many, what's the time frame for the Committee of Nine? Because I'm finished in 3 months.
Well, whatever the, it has to finish for the Committee of Nine in a, before the end of this school year.
If it's, if it's late afternoon or early evening, I could do it.
But what's really nice is whoever ends up in your position is going to end up with the committee. So if it, for some reason...
Oh, by proxy.
Your proxy will be there. So.
Okay. God bless them. I'll do it. If you want me.
Which, okay.
Which one did you want?
The Committee of Nine.
Committee of Nine.
Not in a blaze of glory, right?
So to Karen. Hang on, let me. Karen, George, and Kathleen... I have to be on the shared decision making. Okay, Steve. So the
who's on the curriculum committee?
Frank and Guy and Richard.
How many do we have?
Three.
No, I mean,
how many committees?
I mean, I'm on both these.
I know.
You can be on all of them.
And you're doing a heck of a good job.
Yeah, yeah, like I don't have any more time left.
Yeah, I know.
That's the shared decision making. That's what you're looking for.
The shared decision making, Steve.
Yeah, that's the title of the
shared committee. Decision at the superintendent level. No, I'm sorry, I said administrative.
The district
level. Thank you.
Yes, the district.
The curriculum.
So which one did I just volunteer for?
Curriculum.
We have to redo that, and we have to.
Professional development plan.
Yes.
That's the committee.
That's the committee.
It's nothing personal.
It's the PDP.
Yes, PDP. That's what it is. PDP. So if. Everybody's, well, I guess pretty much are, it is what it is.
Signed up.
Well, I gave everybody a chance for a choice.
Will it, how will we advertise dates separately for
yes.
the various committees?
Yes, whatever the piece is, the Committee of Nine, we still need to get the faculty and the administrative people, and then they'll congruently set up a time. The curriculum, I don't know who was Dr. Rogers. He was the one that did that one.
Maybe he'll come back and talk.
Yeah, bring him back.
Maybe
bring him back. You've got a
probably
guideline
Donna.
Already. It's just a matter of putting them down.
We're not going to pay him mileage.
Fly man, use your frequent flyer thing.
I think I'll be on all of them, so I'll work on communications
well,
with you.
If that's Dr. Rogers, obviously Sue's going to have to fall into that.
Yes,
there
that's
you go.
Scott, now I feel humble. I feel bad. I was complaining.
No.
She's tuned everybody right now.
Okay. Yes, she does.
Way to go, Sue. Thank you.
Yes.
Did I nod my head?
When we asked for volunteers, you nodded your head. We put you on the committee for
on all three of them.
All three of them.
It really was a sneeze, but it served the same purpose.
Curriculum, PDP. Group. I'll open the floor again for a brief moment for a public comment.
Can I ask an additional comment? Though,
yes. And, I'm sorry.
The two children that were involved in the 400-year celebration about Champlain.
Yep.
Yep.
Do they receive anything from their individual buildings in terms of a letter? And if not, I'm wondering, I don't know if this has set a precedent, but when students do things special like this, I think it would be nice for the board to send some kind of a note to them or to their parents. Or it becomes really obvious when you then later want to apply to be in the Junior Honor Society or do other things, and you're trying to think of all these accomplishments. Those special kinds of things are really nice to have.
It's a great idea. And I'd be remiss if I told you I get it every time I have on some. I know that I haven't kept up with all of them. And I really can't speak at the building level if the principals do
I mean, I don't know how it's best done.
But we do try to acknowledge it with a follow-up of some kind. But it's a great point.
I can publish all of these items in our newsletter with pictures of the students and articles about their accomplishments.
True.
And then we have award ceremonies twice a year, and we try to, the teachers will recognize the students.
Okay, so it's covered.
I still think it'd be nice to get something from the administration and or the board, not just
or even have
the
a
building.
Board member there.
Especially for something that represents a school outside of the school. Mm-hmm.
Is that something that is better looked at in policy so that
policy.
We don't have someone upset, why didn't I get a note? Like you just said, if it's outside of the school maybe,
yeah.
It's within, you know, I don't know.
Could you have that in one of the letters? Any information like that be forwarded? You know,
yeah.
So that we would know.
There's always somebody that can get left out and then get angry.
I'm sure if somebody was left out and they told us, we could take care of it.
Sure. George, you had another question, or was that the question you had?
No, I have another question.
Yes.
In the board packet, we received information about the reserve funds, the different reserve funds that were possible. And some of these reserve funds we have, some of these designated reserve funds we don't have. I was just wondering if we're going to discuss this as a board level. I would like to discuss it at a board level.
Let's have it.
At some point in time.
If it's something that you were looking forward to, it probably should be discussed tonight then, because we're getting near adopting. So if it's something that you wanted changed.
It's not so much something I wanted to change. Some of these funds, and I thank Ron very much. I assume they came from this. This is exactly what I think we need to discuss. Some of these reserve funds we do not have, and since we have a excess undesignated reserve funds, and some of these reserve funds are not fully funded, you know, is it reasonable to fully fund them? You know, we're not taking money away from the taxpayers. We're, in any sense, creating endowed funds that, as people retire or whatever, instead of having to pay for those expenses out of the general funds, we would now have a reserve fund that would pay for these funded employment benefits and things such as that. So I would like to see that these funds, we discuss them and decide which ones to fund or fully fund and move on.
Wouldn't that help to then protect against scrutiny and be in excess of the 4%?
Yes, excess of
4%. So could we have a recommendation maybe from, I mean, I don't know if you're all prepared to discuss that.
Kathleen?
No, I just didn't know whether or not it was unfair to expect them to discuss it tonight if they had ideas or.
Well, we should discuss it as a board tonight to find direction is what we're looking for.
Karen?
I'm only going to give you my personal opinion. In 3 years from now, as the superintendent indicated, when the stimulus money is gone, we're going to be in a situation that we were facing before the stimulus money came to us this year. Only we're going to have 2 years of costs added to that. In my opinion, we should not lock up our fund balance, because once we put it in these reserves, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, we won't be able to get that out to help support the budget for 3 years out and in the future. And in my opinion, we have to be very careful what we do now, because we're going to impact 3 years and into the future. That's my opinion.
Yes, Becky.
You make a very good point. Last meeting, I know you were unable to attend, the discussion was centered on Stan's concern was that he felt that he had, if I misquote you, tell me, a very strong indication that we were going to take a hit, so to speak, and that's not the word you used, for being in excess of the 4% of our fund balance. Therein the reason for taking the 1.75. I agree with what you're saying.
It's my opinion if the auditor writes us up and that's the hit, we can take that hit because they have been commenting on fund balances.
I totally agree.
For years.
Absolutely.
If the state says, if you've got to find, and I can't believe they're going to do this because they see the what's going to happen.
I understand.
And they say, we're going to deduct money from you if you do that, then in my opinion, that's when we do what we have
absolutely
to do.
Absolutely not.
I'm afraid to do it now, but I just want to share my own personal opinion with you.
Well, where I was going with this, I wanted to use a little more fund balance this year to knock down our fund balance.
And I expressed that.
Yes.
That I hated to see us back away from that because of people losing their jobs, having their hours cut from 40 to 28 hours. That concerns me. Mm-hmm.
One comment I have about the pieces that we have. If you start putting money into those reserves, you're earmarking it for a specific thing. And once that's in that reserve, you can use it for that point and nothing else. So if we tie up some of that money, you can't come back
some
out.
Some of them, yes, but some of them say maybe transferred to other funds following the public hearing.
Maybe
transferred to other funds.
We probably should have some
clarification on that.
I would have provided a little bit more detail in the memo, but for brevity, I tried to keep it. It started out as a 7-page memo, and I reduced it. Now, it's not as black and white as putting money into a reserve account and then only having it earmarked for that purpose, because the nature of most of these reserve accounts allows for flexibility or requirement, actually, to analyze that the need for the reserve account on a regular basis. And if at any point in time the need no longer exists, then the board is permitted to reduce that reserve fund and put that back into undesignated reserves. For instance, the tax reserve fund that we have. We're currently funded for what we know are outstanding tax surcharge proceedings. And so what I do is the proceeding that's outstanding, I take and I apply the tax rate for that year that it's in contested, and then we have funded that amount should it settle. We could fund that. Now, if it settles at a lower amount, there's no longer the need for that full funding, so we can untie up that reserve and put it back in the undesignated reserve account. That's just one example. And that's the case for other items, too. If at any point we reevaluate and do an analysis and establish that the full funding is no longer required, then there's some flexibility on what you can do with that. There's not a lot of flexibility, but there is some flexibility. So it's not necessarily as black and white as once you put it into a reserve account, you can never get to it again. There has to be an evaluation of those reserve accounts.
Stan?
Yes.
The one reserve fund I think this board should really consider is a repair reserve fund. We don't have one right now. Mm-hmm. This we have two major facilities here. Mm-hmm. And a boiler goes, some major problem goes with this one of these facilities, all of a sudden we could be strapped with a $20,000, $30,000, $40,000 expense that's not anticipated.
Yes, or more.
Or more. And I think we... That's one fund I'm surprised that we don't have a reserve fund for. I mean, to me, it only makes sense when you're dealing with two major facilities of this magnitude and square footage not to have a repair reserve fund. I thought we did. I'm surprised that we don't have one right now.
In other words, we could be scrambling to move money from one account to the other to cover the unexpected things.
We've done that.
And some of these things don't necessarily need to be decided since they're not budgetary items, so you have time. And I can only tell you from a historical standpoint, maybe 2 years ago, at the close of the fiscal year prior to accepting the auditor's report, the board at that time had made a determination to fund some of the reserve accounts. And so that happened sometime in June or July before we accepted the audit report.
But so isn't it pertinent to... Thought you were finished. Excuse me. Go ahead.
I have a tendency to hesitate sometimes when I talk.
It's all right.
I was done. That's all.
But whereas you're saying there's not an urgency, and I know the building's not burning down, so to speak, but isn't it pertinent to the fund balance issue that is urgent to discuss before we vote on?
Yes, and that's true, but as far as the indication of being near the limitations of SCB, prior to closing out the books and knowing what's in the undesignated fund balance or potentially could be at that point in time, the board could make a transfer before settling this year's fiscal audited reports, and then that might be a time to apply funds.
The fund balance discussion would affect this budget only if 1.75 was changed. It doesn't necessarily mean that designating a new account, as you said, Frank, with a certain amount of money to it, as long as it doesn't affect the 1.75 that I've already spoken to,
everything that
happened tonight remains the same.
Right, yeah, I knew that.
So in
I
that
knew.
Sense, it's separate in that sense.
Right, I knew that. I knew we're talking about the 2.8 or 2.9 that we have currently.
Right. I'm just following up on Kathleen's.
But some of them, you have to have voter approval to establish.
Correct. Some do.
So if we were within the time frame before this vote, we wouldn't be expending additional community money for a separate vote for a fund, mm-hmm. to establish a fund. You know what I'm saying?
It would have to be approved as a proposition.
Yeah. Well, that's what the summary says.
To
the
for instance, a capital reserve account would have to be approved as a proposition.
I don't know if we can do that at this point.
So it's probably too premature to do that?
You can't fund it.
I think it's too late to get another proposition.
You have to first have the voters approve the fund, and then next year you can fund it. So there's a year lag before you can actually fund an account that the voters approve with the capital reserve. So there's additional caveats to the issue at hand. It's not as simplified as I put in that memo because it becomes quite lengthy.
Richard?
I'm assuming that... any decision from the state on our fund balance wouldn't be immediate, that we'd have some lead time. I mean, they wouldn't come out and say, as of tomorrow, if you haven't spent this money, we're doing something. And my point is, I don't want to throw a lot of money into an account that I don't really have to. Mm-hmm. And my point is, they keep saying we have a fund balance, but they're not saying it's a major violation. If they come back and say, hey, it's a major violation, you have to fix it, then I'm willing to fix it. But right now, I like to leave the money there. Looking ahead past the stimulus, we're probably going to need it. And I don't want it tied up at all. I could see if we have to, but I don't see at this point that we really have to.
Well, have you gotten any further written information? Last meeting, you said that you had a real strong indication that it was happening.
Nothing yet. It's still pretty quiet from the last time we heard
At the chief school's officers meeting today, Mr. King, as he routinely does, gives prints from school districts that have been audited and the findings that the comptroller has drawn about those. And looking through the packet I had today, there were most of them, there's probably 20 school districts listed, none of them from our area. But and whenever they made a reference to fund balance, the issue was always the question of about the amount being higher than the allowable, you know, 4%, whatever. But the solution or the recommendation, for what it's worth, the recommendation in every single one of those was after pointing out to the district, it promises to address it as quickly as it can. That literally is the phrase that's put in next to each and every one of those findings. So if I'm reading into that anything, it might suggest that there's not an imminent hammer, if you will, to come. And that's all I can comment on is that language. It's the identical wording for every school district where there was a question about your fund balance.
So that's
sure we
different.
Have time to do something.
That's
to take
different.
We have a meeting every 2 weeks.
So I guess our president.
No. So Ron, is there a way? Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Well, looking at it, quite frankly, we don't have enough money in our fund budget, fund balance to establish new designated fund balances. You know, I don't think we're going to be going to the voters saying we want to establish this fund balance to move something in that we can go to the voters. But some of these can be established without voter approvals, such as a repair fund, and that sounds like it'd be a reasonable thing to do, a business of this size, to have a $100,000 reserve fund for unexpected repairs.
And it's transferable, so it's still flexible.
Mm-hmm. But my other question is, in terms of your day-to-day operation, would it help to have some of these funds funded so when somebody retires, we don't have to move money from account to account? And you know, that should relieve the strain on the general budget. It should relieve the strain on the taxpayers to have to come up with the employee benefit accrued liability reserve fund. You know, do you pay out of it now, or do you pay out of the general fund?
We pay out of the general fund for now.
But there is a reserve.
There is a reserve account, and
so why don't we use it?
There's a half-funded reserve account, and I'm all for recommending certain types of reserve accounts that we need, because it's not about meeting. It's not about the hammer. It's about doing what's fiscally sound for the district over the course of the next few years. But also keep in mind that as you establish certain reserve funds and then may tap into them for certain expenditures, then you have to replenish those reserve accounts as well. So that factors into your future planning of how much you have available to establish reserve funds.
So it becomes basically a mandated budget expense every year.
Right, and you fund them through a budgetary transfer, some of those you end up now putting it into the budget so that you can replenish it.
No, that doesn't sound attractive, then. If you pay out of it and you got to pay into it. You had the reserve fund so you didn't have to keep.
Right, but at some point that reserve fund will be deplenished if you continue to. So I'm not saying it's an annual thing, but at some point in time it will need to be replenished. Not on an annual basis, so it's still fiscally sound to do it as part of a financial planning mechanism.
I agree. I'm not a great person of all these accounts, but the one for the equipment sounds reasonable. But I think that we need a recommendation from the superintendent of building and grounds. What would be an amount that, I'll say $100,000 doesn't sound like much, but is it enough? My point is just for an emergency, I wouldn't know how much that would cost. They must have some idea. Maybe they can make a recommendation of an amount that we establish a fund so that we don't take out a general fund. I just don't know how much it could be. I'm not against that one, but.
Can I ask another question? And are we talking about the repair reserve fund? I forgot. Does the repair reserve fund generate any kind of aid, building aid?
I don't believe so. I don't know that to be. And another point, too, is that as you'll see in the memo, some of the reserve funds are established by state education law. And then other reserve funds are established by municipal law. And there is some differences of opinion between SED and municipal on how you can use them. So, and I've broken those I haven't made the differences known within the document, but in the document I did make known of which ones are SED established reserve accounts and which ones are municipal established reserve accounts. And usually where the difference of opinion comes in is the ruling of the comptroller. The comptroller has a difference of opinion sometimes with SED on how you can use certain reserve funds. Those are all things that would have to be taken into consideration. This memo pretty much is the beginning of the discussion about the reserve fund topic. Some of these other items that I've brought out in the discussion are things to keep in mind as we begin this discussion in the future.
Yes, Richard.
The reason, I guess my next question would be this. If, say, the boiler blew up, I'd assume that cost more than $5,000. Wouldn't it have to come in front of the board to be done now, the way we set up?
Well, I do believe what would happen would be that would be taken, we could directly take that from the fund balance in an emergency
situation. Without the approval?
I don't know how the approval process would work.
Well, that's my question. With the fund, if the fund's there, you just do it, right?
Yeah.
Okay, that's what I would. To me, you would think it would streamline for that instance. You might want that because you don't have to worry about getting approval. But obviously, it's something you'd have to fix.
Yeah.
So, however.
Yeah, you'd go to the fund balance anyway.
Right.
For that emergency that wasn't budgeted and deemed an emergency, you could go to the fund balance.
So, the repair budget thing would do that?
And why would you need a repair budget?
That's probably why one hasn't been really set up yet.
Okay.
Over the years.
Well, I think there's a confusion too. A repair reserve is not a separate account that's established like a tax cert, but the repair reserve would be part of your undesignated fund balance. So when they say for emergency expenditures, the board can tap into the reserve, I mean, can tap into the fund balance. They may be indicating you can tap into your repair reserve, which is part of your designated fund balance.
Yes.
Not necessarily just go into any fund balance.
Does that lower our percentage?
So. There is a reason for having a repair reserve.
Yes, and we don't have that now, Mike.
We don't have one now.
So basically, does that lower what they consider your excess?
Yes, it does.
All right.
But this is stuff we don't need for.
We don't need to discuss.
But we can discuss it before.
No, I think we need to continue to discuss.
So what I'm looking for is, are we, as the board, interested in bringing this back for some more discussion?
Yes.
I think it's.
Yes.
Okay.
And when does the treasurer start? Would she be part of this?
She started.
She started?
2 weeks ago.
No,
Monday.
Oh, she just doesn't come to
me.
Yesterday.
She started yesterday.
Yes. I'm back to trying to open the floor again for public comment. Yes.
I'd like to. Well, first of all, I'm Jackie Winnock, and I'm the Beekman Town Elementary Family School Organization President. And I would like to thank you very much for considering granting Ms. Gardner her tenure. I appreciate that. And also for your the relations with parent organizations. If you have any kind of committee, I would volunteer myself for that. That's all I would like to say. Thank you.
Actually, we're going to need a parent on the shared decision making. If you're interested, we will.
Certainly.
Okay. Thank you.
By the way, honey, I'm doing something else.
That's fine. I have a comment. My name is Paul Winnock. I noticed walking through the building, I see a no bullying policy. Is that correct?
Yes.
This is the superintendent. Mm-hmm. That applies to all students, correct?
Correct.
Staff and employees of the building?
Correct.
As well as yourself?
Code of conduct, correct.
Okay, I was just curious because I thought some people didn't apply to it, but thank you for clearing that up.
You're welcome. Okay, yes.
Whether it's easier to speak to in person. or wait for a letter that never comes, can you send a letter? Thank you.
Any other comments to the board? Okay. Not seeing any other comments, there's been a request for executive session. So,
you know what's a concern?
The purpose of?
Purpose.
Purpose is for personnel.
I'll second that.
Steve made the motion to have clerk pro tem. Need a motion to go into executive?
Motion.
Second?
I'll second.
Steve?
Have to vote on clerk pro tem.
How long was?
Oh, yes, I'm sorry. I need to vote on the clerk pro tem first before I get far along. So, all in favor of myself as clerk pro tem?
Aye.
Abstains? Noes?
5 minutes.
Okay. Frank, your question?
The length of this.
Very short. Okay. Very short.
Can I request, please, the chair to make an announcement for the participants leaving to look for my glasses? I'm sorry.
Oh, look for your glasses.
In the glove.
Glasses?
When they leave. Okay,
oh,
thanks.
Oh, you found them?
Got it. Thank you.
You know,
no, she found the glove.
Hey, it's been a hard year, okay? Thank you very much.
Okay.
A little levity.
Let's go back a little bit.
Yes.
The motion is executive first or the clerk pro tem?
I just didn't want him going to the Lions.
Well, we haven't voted on executive session yet.
Yes. Now, what's the executive? Who's the motion?
Guy. Steve. All in favor?
Aye.
George.
Aye.
I didn't want my glasses to go to the Lions Club, okay?
Hi, Sherry.
You have glasses to Lions Club.
Can I ask a question?